Steve, thank you. From the bottom of our hearts, we thank Steve Bertrand. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's the Monday edition of our show. We're 312-981-7200. Call us, text us. We would love to hear from you.
All I got to say is it's a sunshine day, finally. We went, what, 8 days without sunshine? Is that what happened?
I think it was, right? It
Doesn't
was just
it change
over a
week. Your whole outlook?
Yeah, it does. I like it.
You hesitated.
I'm pro-sun. It was strange today having to reach for the sunglasses for the first time in I don't know how long.
I think I gave myself RK surgery with the sunlight. It was so bright.
Did you stare right into it? You're supposed to stare right into the sun. It's the best thing for you. It turned your life around.
What a weekend.
Yes. Starting with?
Well, a lot of activity at the airports, which I have to tell you, I was tempted to drive out to O'Hare and protest. And then there were reports coming over saying, you know, police have closed off the roads. They're not letting anyone in.
Right.
So then I'm like, I'm not driving all the way over there just to watch.
That makes sense.
I don't know what's happening.
Heart was in it.
This isn't my country right now.
It's gotten a little dicey. And actually, one of the stories that I wanted to discuss, Steve talked about a little bit and played some audio in the news. Steve, do you still have that handy? Because what you
Sure.
had there was Senator Charles Schumer explaining.
Apparently, he was talking to reporters about the Syrian refugees, and he had a little crack in his voice.
Right. I'm sorry. Go on. Play.
Executive order was mean-spirited and un-American. It was implemented in a way that created chaos and confusion.
Even if you're a huge supporter of Donald Trump's, you'd be hard-pressed to disagree with that. That's exactly what it caused. It caused a lot of confusion. It kind of came out of nowhere. So then Donald Trump comments on Chuck Schumer and the fact that he may be embellishing a little bit.
And that was just this morning.
I'm going to ask him who is his acting coach. Because I know him very well. I don't see him as a crier. If he is, he's a different man. There's about a 5% chance that it was real, but I think there were fake tears.
Well, he did finally say Israel, so I give him points for that.
How do you say that out loud? I just really have a lot of questions.
All right.
He's fighting with the Pope.
He's fighting with everybody.
I mean,
except Kellyanne Conway. All right. What about the part where he says if he was, then he's a different man? What does that mean?
He's not a crier?
Right.
He's not what he expected him to be. He's different from what I expected.
Isn't that in and of it? I mean, there's so much to pick apart and be upset about, but that's upsetting. Because if you're Chuck Schumer, if you're Charles Schumer, you could certainly be emotional about this. Why wouldn't you be emotional about this? And for the president to call you out on that and go, oh, a crier, great.
It was a little demeaning, wasn't it?
It was extremely demeaning. Yes. It was horribly demeaning.
Can I play it for you again?
Sure. Yes.
I'm going to ask him who is his acting coach, because I know him very well. I don't see him as a crier. If he is, he's a different man. There's about a 5% chance that it was real, but I think there were fake tears.
So that's Donald Trump's way of saying, be a man. A man doesn't get up there and cry over a situation like this. But yeah, this is a horrible situation.
I honestly have felt sick to my stomach all weekend since reading all these news reports. And it just seems like he just made a rash decision without figuring. Did he even tell people how to execute his actions?
I don't know exactly. Steve, what would the paces be over something like this?
Well,
Does he have the right to do this on his own, or doesn't this have to go through Congress somehow? It doesn't.
The president has great authority when it comes to establishing border procedures. And, you know, he can declare that there is a considered threat, and I think then the courts will give him leeway. But typically when an administration is going to roll out a policy, something like this, what they do is they have a meeting. They have
right.
all the interested parties sitting around. They say, well, if we do this, how does it work? And if we do that, how would we implement this? And apparently, according to a lot of the reporting I read, they didn't do that with this. They just wung it and threw it out there and didn't sort of brief Homeland Security or brief customs.
Good move.
Mass confusion.
About how to handle it. So then when the order came out, you know, you've got these agencies that now have this new order. Without any sort of direction in how to implement it, and that resulted in them, you know, detaining kids and moms and doctors, citizens. Doctors at the Cleveland Clinic.
Does this mean that if he has a bug about a certain country or people, that he can just continue to do this? If he's not happy, let's just say Mexico, because things were very strained with he in Mexico over the past week. Can he just decide at random, well, you know what? Mexico's not in our best interest right now. Can't come over from Mexico. Is it just that simple, or is there more to it than that?
I think that that could be challenged in court. I think if he can make a case that there is a national interest situation involved, that he would likely win. And so the courts are going to give him, you know, pretty wide berth when it comes to that.
I am planning to go to Mexico for spring break. And
hurry
I
up.
Gotta be. But I'm telling you, I'm having second thoughts about it. How can they? Aren't they going to be mean to me?
Well, no.
What if they detain me? Oh, then I get to stay there, I guess. I mean, really, these are things that affect a lot of people.
Right.
And, you know, I know with the orders that came out that even green cards weren't accepted. And then there's a statement now, well, you know, green cards are okay.
They might be now because the judge ordered them so, but they were not. I mean, you know, think what a green card is. A green card is someone living here legally working towards citizenship.
Right.
That allows them to go back and forth from country to country. That's safe passage.
And they've been fully vetted already.
And then they come in to an American airport, having done nothing to create any suspicion. You know, these individuals who were detained, there was not a specific action by any of them that prompted attention. They were held because of the country that they're from. Not just prevented from coming to the country, but detained.
So, Steve, for a lot of people over the weekend, they got on a flight to the United States having no idea that this was what was in store for them once they arrived here, correct?
Absolutely, correct.
And that
yes.
mother and child, wasn't it like a 12-hour flight or something, and then to be detained with, what, a 3-year-old?
Yeah.
There was the story of the doctor who was, she works at the Cleveland Clinic.
Yes.
And I don't know if she ended up turning back or she was stopped at the border. You know, she's a doctor at one of the most prestigious medical institutions in our country.
Yeah.
It makes me sick to my stomach, honestly, all weekend. This is not America.
No, certainly not the version that we've come to know and love in the past.
So what happens now, Steve?
Well, the president...
Does this go to court? It becomes a court battle at this point, doesn't it?
It can. The president tweeted out this morning that it's been a success, according to his Homeland Security Secretary General Kelly. The president, as I said in the news, said there are a lot of bad dudes out there.
Yeah.
And this is helping.
Dudes.
It's being fought in several courts around the country. But, you know, there are two things. There's the detention, and that's what most of the federal judges were interested in. You know, can these people be detained having come here legally? And then there's the broader policy, the ban. And, you know, I think that it will be harder for opponents to get a judge to overthrow the ban because of the reasons we were talking about. It was easier for them to get stays to allow for these people detained to be released.
And Donald Trump was saying, you know, why would I announce a week in advance? Because then if somebody was trying to infiltrate the country, they would get in before the ban went into effect. Does he think every single solitary terrorist is tuned in and following his Twitter feed?
I don't know.
I just have so many questions.
Yeah, we all do. It's yeah. All right, we need to take a break. Let's take a break. If you want to jump in on this, as Wendy pointed out, an interesting weekend. Sometimes interesting is good. Sometimes it's not good. Give us a call.
I want plain and boring now.
Plain and boring isn't
the
worst thing in the world sometimes. 312-981-7200 if you want to call in or text in. We'd love to hear from you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and we're trying to make some sense out of some of the goings-on over the weekend. Most important, the ban at the airports. A bunch of calls, a bunch of texts. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to be heard.
All right, let's talk to Mike, Bill. Strap in.
All right.
Hi, Mike.
Yes, how you doing? Yeah, I was wondering if anybody would like to speak to the people of the Boston Marathon bombing to see what they would think about this this temporary ban to get proper vetting for the people coming into this country or going in and out of the country, whether they were U.S. citizens or not, that they're being allowed to go somewhere and be radicalized and then come back to this country and, you know, see what happens. You know, like I said, the bombing.
I don't think those suspects, I'm not sure if they were born in the U.S. or not, but they were not born or from the seven affected countries here, I don't believe.
And they were U.S. citizens.
They weren't U.S. citizens?
They were.
They were. The Tsarnaev brothers you're referring to, right?
Yeah, correct. They were two brothers, but they were allowed to go in and out of the country, become radicalized, come back into this country, and then see what happened. You know, the point is not if they were American citizens or not, but they're being allowed to travel, come back into this country from some of these affected countries that are on the ban, that have been radicalizing.
What about this doctor from Cleveland?
Yeah.
What about this mother with her 3-year-old kid, and she had, was it a visa or a green card to be here? I mean, what about these people?
I don't know. Maybe you should detain them to find out what they were doing, where they actually were. I don't know. I believe
she's a doctor. She's a doctor at a hospital in Cleveland. She's worked in this country for years. She's a doctor.
At what point does somebody become radicalized?
Well, do you ask every time they leave the country and come back?
That's something that has to be figured out. So why not err on the side of caution? Okay, where she was going, who she met. I mean, it's getting a little, like I said, why don't anybody talk to the people in the Boston Marathon? I mean, and actually see how they feel on this. You know, a firsthand, something that affected people firsthand.
I think everyone kind of agrees with you that the Boston bombing victims, you know, would have a big say, and we should look out for them. Absolutely. And we should make the country safe so that those things don't happen. I think we all agree on that. The difference is whether this policy implemented would have helped in the Boston Marathon case. And I think what we've been saying, the evidence is that it wouldn't have. So in other words, it's a pretty radical step to take that doesn't really address the problem that's been affecting the country. Does that make sense?
Well, it's a pretty radical. Yes, I understand your point, but you need a radical step to fight radical Islam, okay? And that's all that Donald Trump is trying to do. Okay, maybe radical needs something to fight radical. Okay, I mean, just giving an open door policy isn't working, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, you know, talk to the people in France, talk to the people in Germany. Look what's going on. I mean, I don't think he is trying to hurt anybody. He's just asking for some help, and everybody is fighting him. And he's trying. What would Donald Trump have to gain by doing this? Absolutely nothing. He's trying to protect American and American citizens. That's it.
Mike, are you, to some extent, yes. You remember Steve Kerr, who used to play for the Bulls?
Absolutely.
Do you know his story about his father?
Johnny Red?
Oh,
no.
No. His father, Malcolm, taught there. He was the president at the American University in Beirut, in Lebanon, in 1984. And his father was killed by the jihad. They came in and killed his father. They talked to Steve Kerr about this yesterday and said, what do you think about this ban? And he was so against it. I mean, I know that if you're involved in something as dramatic as the Boston Marathon or what Steve Kerr has gone through, it's certainly going to temper your opinion. But I guarantee you, as many people as say, yeah, you got to stop everybody from coming into the country who's potentially dangerous, you're also going to find people like Steve Kerr who says, let's be realistic. Something like this can happen anywhere at any time. You can't just stop an entire nation or an entire religion. It's impossible.
Okay, so then the next time something happens, then nobody should talk about it and say how terrible it is. Nobody should talk about it. It shouldn't even be a news story.
Why would you do it that way?
Well, because, you know, you have to say, hey, things are going to happen. Okay, so it happened. Boom, move on to the news. Okay, somebody is trying to do something and take a proactive step to stop it. So why doesn't everybody just take it back and say, hey, let's see how this shakes out. Everybody's been inconvenienced in life.
I think the issue is whether this is a good step to stop it. Everyone agrees there should be steps to stop it. Is this a good one? The Tsarnaev brothers, I don't think either of them, traveled to the seven countries. Maybe the older brother went back to Chechnya, but he wasn't in one of the countries here. So,
I think you're correct.
Would add that to the list then.
Wouldn't you?
Well, I just think I think I'd I'd have more faith in just checking people out when they apply to come here rather than issuing a blanket ban.
Well, I don't know. Do you remember what happened in Chechnya at that school with the Chechenian rebels?
That wasn't...
Wiped out a whole school? So I don't know. Anybody that's going to Chechnya, I don't think they're going there to...
What if you were going to Paris? Vacation. What if you were going to Paris and the French said, I don't want anyone from Chicago? You know how many people get killed in Chicago?
Right. We got a bad rep.
It has nothing to do with you individually, but you're being impacted by it.
That may be their right until they find out who the heck I am.
So Mike, you have to know that the way terrorism works is if we become a little bit harder on one country or one area of the world, what the terrorist groups will do then is put sleeper cells in places that we're not keeping an extra special eye on. You know that, right?
Okay, well, let me ask you then what is your solution? Okay, let me ask you what, if you're taking this what Trump did, what is your solution that maybe you could offer up to Donald Trump?
I don't have any steadfast solution, but I know that this isn't the way that America was built to be that, to put up that sort of a wall. It's as wrong can be. It's not the America that we've all grown up with. And
okay,
the times change, but this just seems way too much to me.
Okay, at a certain point, how many people can you rescue, okay, without it affecting this country? How many people? We weren't set up to deal with the influx of these refugees. We weren't.
Right.
Okay, and not knowing who is coming in at a certain time. How in the heck can you vet somebody from Syria? The place is in rubble. Are you going to call them up and say, you know what? Hey, did Mike work at a Walmart for you over here? Is he a good guy? The country doesn't exist. It's a bombed out shell. Who are you going to call to vet somebody? Let me know that. How are they going to vet somebody from Syria? They don't know. The place is in rubble.
And why isn't Saudi Arabia part of this ban? That's where...
I'm not... They should be.
That's
absolutely.
The... Since 9/11, none of the terrorists came from any of the seven countries that are the subject of the president's executive order. I was reading statistics all week. Saudi Arabia had most of them, but that's not part of the ban. I don't understand.
Absolutely. Somebody should put in a call to Trump and say, hey, what's up with that?
Why don't you call him, Mike?
Okay, yeah, I will call the White House, okay? You have more of a voice of the radio station to say, hey,
the media? Are you kidding, Mike? We're supposed to not talk.
Well,
he hates us.
Why is everybody talking and everybody's inviting people to call in?
Which, by the way, thank you for calling in, and we appreciate you giving your side of it. I mean, we can have a discussion, and nobody's yelling
Mike,
at each other.
We're talking about it because it's so upsetting, and it's foreign to us.
It's foreign to a lot of people, but somebody has to give a little leeway. Everybody has to be inconvenienced at some point in their life. Okay, we're not talking people coming in here for minor issues.
Do you ever travel out of the country, Mike? Ever? Do you go to other countries?
Oh yes.
All right,
and it's horrendous. When I come back to this country, I kiss the ground.
Let's say that you were on one of those trips to another country, and you got to the airport, and you didn't expect anything out of the ordinary. And all of a sudden, they detain you for 24 hours. Wouldn't that be? I mean, I know you say that we all have to live through bad things every once in a while, but that's beyond a bad thing. Wouldn't you feel? I mean, America has had incidents where we could potentially be dangerous to other parts of the country. What if you went to another country and all of a sudden you're in a room for 24 hours? How would you feel?
And you have the proper documentation to get into that country.
Well, you know what? That is up to the other country. And if I tell you. Wholeheartedly, I wouldn't want to leave the country anymore. Some of these countries that you're going to, that's what you have to ask.
But that's that's horrible. This isn't a world where you shouldn't want to ever leave your own country. That's terrible.
That's what it's getting to. I mean, you're the one that's having this diatribe of the issues, and that's the way it is. Would you want to go to Lebanon right now?
It's not at the top of my list, but
you're correct. Even in Mexico, would you want to go to some places in Mexico? They're cutting people's heads off in Mexico. Would you want to bring your family there?
Chicago's
statistics.
I was just going to say, that's the same thing, Mike, that people in other countries could be saying about Chicago. And Chicago overwhelmingly is very safe. There are some areas that are unsafe.
Okay, I could give you a list or a red.
Mike,
zone.
We can't because we have to go to commercials.
Yeah, we have to take a break. But Mike,
okay. Listen.
Thanks for the call, though.
We appreciate you calling.
Well, that's what it's supposed to be. Is back and forth banter and try to even something up and to get dialogue. That's it. That's all I'm trying to do.
We agree with that.
I appreciate your time.
Sure, absolutely love it. Thank you, Mike.
Sure.
See, we got to talk, and you know, there are a lot of people that are not going to see eye to eye on this at all. I just know that I've been sick to my stomach all week every time I think about it.
No, I understand that. All right, we do need to take a break, so we'll get some news in. Steve has the news, and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. All right, this weekend a ban was put out by our president. Maybe I should say the president of the United States of America, Donald Trump. And what we're talking about now is there were people that had the proper documentation to be let back into the country and were detained. Mike, our caller before, said, you know, that happens. People get inconvenienced. It's quite an inconvenience. And Brett wants to share his story. Hi, Brett. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing today, Wendy?
Confused, but okay.
Well, you know what? About a year ago, I was working for an Israeli startup company, and I had to go to Israel for some training. And on my flight back, I was detained for 4 to almost 5 hours by Israeli security. I had my passport. I had all my documentation from the company, you know, because when you travel to Israel, they want to see documentation from the company. You're an American businessman. That's why you're going there. I had that. They had no problem detaining me. And I don't think making a ruckus was going to get me out of there any sooner.
What goes on during those 4 or 5 hours that you're being detained, Brett? What do they do?
So they already had my checked luggage. They probably went through my carry-on 5 or 6 times. They do, you know, there'll be moments of just, you know, there'll be an hour of silence. Then somebody comes in to talk to you, and we'll just ask you a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Why are you on this flight? What were you doing in Israel? I don't really know much about interrogation techniques, but I think they're looking to make somebody nervous and slip up.
And I'm guessing that worked, didn't it?
Well, not on me.
I didn't
have anything, you know.
Yeah, but,
you had nothing to hide.
Right.
But there's still that element of the unknown. You're in a foreign country. I don't know that they allow you any counsel.
Yeah.
Is anyone allowed? Are you allowed to talk to anybody? No.
No counsel. But there were some other people in the security area.
Yeah.
And there was a one woman who was getting a little. You could tell it was stressing her out. And
yeah.
I did have to tell her. I was like, you know what? You're not in America. You really need to stay calm.
Right.
You don't want. They don't care. And we were all Americans.
Yeah.
So no, it is an inconvenience. But at the end of the day, when they brought me in to do another chemical swipe of my luggage.
Yeah.
For, I assume, explosives. And one of the Israeli officers, she apologized. She said, you know, we're really sorry. We know it's an inconvenience. And I pulled out my phone and I showed her a picture of my 3 kids. And I said, if what you're doing makes sure this flight gets me to them.
Yeah.
Safely, do what you got to do.
Yeah. Oh.
And so, I mean, on some levels, yeah, I was born in America. I know America's not on the list with Israel, but they had no problem detaining us.
Does it make you never want to go back again when you have an incident like that? Does that tell you that maybe that's not the best place to journey to? It's terrible, but does that checker your thoughts of going back?
You know, no, not really.
No.
I think, you know, they are surrounded by, you know, in their mind, they're surrounded by their enemies, so they have to do this to make sure that nothing happens to that flight on the way, you know, on the way to its destination.
Sure.
Which, you know, quite frankly, I didn't want anything happening for that flight.
No, of course not.
Not on the way back.
So, Brett, what do you feel about what's happening now with our airports here in the United States?
You know, we, as a country, we have sovereign borders. And those have to be, we have to protect ourselves from those who would do us harm. I wish there was a perfect way of doing it, but there probably isn't. And, as much as I can feel for anybody who's been inconvenienced by this, it's, you know, we have a newly elected president who's pretty, you know, emotional, or he's, you know, kind of just, it seems like he's signing a lot of legislation in at whim. and it's gonna take some time to sort this out. And yeah, I mean, right now I wish there was a better way of doing it. I wish you didn't have innocent people being detained. I really do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was detained too, and I was, you know, I was innocent of any kind of, you know, threat to another country. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. Brett, that's a horrible story, but we appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
Take care.
Quick break. More phone calls?
Yeah. If you're on hold, please stay there. We'll get to as many of you as we can. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right. We're talking about the pros and cons of the immigration ban that took place over the weekend. We're at 312-981-7200. If you want to give us a call or a text, we would love to hear from you. Let's start out with Michael. Michael has some insight into this. Hey, Michael, how are you?
No, I'm good. Good morning, Bill and Wendy. How are you?
A little confused, dazed, confused, that kind of thing.
Well, I wouldn't be, but I just wanted to say that I haven't called into any talk show for 10 years.
Yeah.
But I listen to you when I'm driving around, and I do appreciate the courtesies and the way that you walk through discussions with people. It's very...
Well, thank you for saying that.
It's very good.
Thanks.
Thanks. So, we can all learn something sometimes if we listen.
Right, and sometimes it just seems, I read a study that since the 2000 election that Americans have become just completely off the charts with incivility in discussions with each other. It has something to do with people thought that that election was, again, stolen or rigged, and people can chart stuff on these surveys I've seen from political discussions. But to the topic... I've got about four quick points, and I also travel internationally, and I was also detained in London at Heathrow for 4.5-5 hours. I have a CPAP machine, and the power converter thing blew out. Had to go buy a new one, and when they saw that on my luggage, they detained me for like 3.5-4 hours checking my luggage and stuff. That stuff just happens. And I, like the previous caller said to the lady, if this is what it takes to be safe, I'm all for it.
But Michael, everyone, I've been detained. Every time I go to Las Vegas, I get detained at McCarran Airport. Nobody enjoys being detained, and I understand the precaution involved. But,
is that because of all the money you've won?
Yes. Yes, that's the reason. But it's unrealistic, I think, to pick out a whole part of the country or a religion and just say, you guys, we don't want you in the country. That just seems a little much, doesn't it?
No.
No?
So I just want to be politically correct in this conversation.
Sure.
What I have done for the last 15 years is cybersecurity.
Oh, all right.
Some of the biggest companies. I can't name the names. I can't name clients and things. But
that's all right.
Let's just say one of my resources was engaged doing the forensic cleanup at the DNC.
Yeah.
So I see things from a global perspective, and let me just say what my personal thoughts are on this, and then
sure.
You guys can dissect it, right. Is we have 10,000 people that sit faces to the glass around the world 7 hours, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, looking at cybersecurity and trends and things. And when we see something, there's different policies in place, procedures with the companies that they set up with us or they have set up internally. And so when we see certain threats or trends of threats, and it could be coming from various parts around the world, there's alerts, and then there's procedures put in place. Sometimes the procedures, like you and they're talking, are logical and sequential, and people are given notice.
Yeah.
Sometimes when there's a very severe attack or threat of something new that no one's seen before, we have customers, major banking financial customers, that will actually shut down servers and shut down websites until they can get the proper protection and modifications made. So it's just my personal assumption that there was a security briefing over the weekend, and I do agree with you about religion and different sects and doing it rapidly, but my interpretation is that something was discovered, there was a trait or a trend or some things were uncovered, and something had to be implemented rapidly versus logically and sequentially with proper advance notice.
Mm-hmm.
And so
has that happened in the past?
Yes,
it has. In the recent past?
You mean with cybersecurity?
Well, yeah, where there's some sort of a red flag that would lead the president to say essentially what happened over the weekend. Has that happened in our lifetime?
Well, When you're talking about the airports, I don't know all of the trends. If you're talking about, so former chief of staff of the U.S. military was one of the board directors of one of the companies I worked for, and he runs private think tanks about the next world war will be a cybersecurity war.
Yeah.
And the things that companies need to do. So I might be going off track, but I would say that the people of America, besides the economy, the number one thing that they wanted change about, wanted to see implemented, was security. And so sometimes when you have, safety issues and safety concerns, it doesn't always follow normal protocol, and it sometimes isn't easy. I do agree with what you and Wendy were saying and some of the other people that, you know, this caused concern and harm, and people aren't sure.
Yeah.
But from what I've been able to glean, it was 7 specific countries where they could have a pattern. And this is what you look for in cybersecurity, Bill, is patterns of traits and trends. Is those countries were touchstones, people had visited them, and then come to other countries and then, like, cross-train or whatever,
yeah,
be militants. And so in the world of cybersecurity, you sometimes have to have rapid deployment, rapid changes to prevent billions of dollars being stolen or IDs being, you know, compromised.
But, so, Michael, I have to ask you really quick because we're almost out of time. When I had asked you if this has happened in our past, in our lifetimes, and that's a hard question to answer, it's alarming to me if this has not happened in our lifetime and Donald Trump's only been in office. At that point, it was 9 days when this happened. What does that say, that we could have gone all those decades without that ever happening once, and all of a sudden he's the president and it happens almost at the very beginning of his presidency?
Well, Bill, that's a great question. And I think two things. Again, the studies, the survey showed Americans wanted something implemented for security. And number two, who knows what might have been caught in the past.
Right.
It had. And three, we don't know what new thing might have popped up, just like a virus or malware or an infection that made them implement this rapidly overnight. I with you and Wendy, and I do have feelings for the people that were detained, but sometimes things happen and you have to rapidly make changes to protect and defend.
All right.
Well, Michael, thank you very much. And, you know, we don't know from any other sources other than you that there was some kind of red flag to make this ban go into effect.
But it is, I'll give you, it is more than possible.
Right. And by the way, if you guys ever do get compromised, keep my number for future reference.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Stay on the line.
Okay.
All right. Hold on. Kevin will get the information.
I'm not calling
him. No.
No. I don't. Everybody has their own story. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Bill. I just think it's a crazy world in which we live, and I wonder what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
That's why I follow Donald Trump on Twitter, because I feel like I'm going to have fast access to what's happening before the media does.
Sure. Absolutely.
Good golly.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Steve has the news, and then boy, has there ever been a bigger 180 in the history of radio?
Thank God.
Colin Hay from Men at Work and his own solo projects will join us. That's right, Colin Hay. You know him and love him from the MTV. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
When the sun comes up over Paris, it's like any other day. Except that you're in Paris. What more need I say? I climbed the Eiffel Tower so I could touch the sky. I took almost an hour, and I can sure see why. And you give me 1,000,000,000 reasons why we're not alone. And you give me 1,000,000,000 seasons where life goes on and on and on and on.
Well, that's just beautiful.
I hate to talk over it,
that's
Colin.
Just beautiful.
Reminded you of those days when you would sit in the car and wait till the song was over.
That's it. We were just explaining to Colin Hay that there was a time here in the United States and throughout the world that if a song came on the radio and you liked that song, you weren't leaving the car until that song was over.
Right.
That's the way it should be.
Colin Hay is in the studio, and Fierce Mercy is the name of the new record. Did some recording in L.A. and Nashville as well.
That's right.
How do you like Nashville?
I love Nashville.
Isn't it fun?
I love it. They have the level of musicianship is nothing short of miraculous.
That's pretty cool.
I went there to record strings for this record, so I was a nine-piece string section there, and when they come in to play on one of your songs, it's really quite heavenly. You know, it was a beautiful experience.
It sounds beautiful. You mentioned the sunshine. You came at an appropriate time because we haven't had sun in Chicago for 8 days. This is the first day, seriously. So thank you for bringing that.
Well, this is nice. It's a nice spot to get the sun, too, here, isn't it?
It's pretty lovely.
Mm.
What are you able to do now, Colin, as a songwriter, as a performer, that you couldn't do when you were a younger man?
What am I able to do now?
Yeah, just throughout your craft, what can you achieve now?
Well, hopefully you just get better at what you do. You know, so you try and do, it's like with a lot of things, as you get older, you try and do more with less.
Yeah.
So you try and if you're writing some, I mean, I think that when I first wrote songs, I first started to try and write songs, I was about 14, but I was writing songs with the Men at Work band.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was racked with self-doubt, and I didn't really know whether they were any good. So I think sometimes you tend to shroud things because you're not really sure about. So you shroud things in different.
Yeah.
Perhaps there's more there than you need. You know, as you get older, you tend to try and, you know, strip away things and lay things a bit more bare and make things more essential.
Yeah, but there were the early version of you. There was a lack of confidence for a while.
Oh, of course, I think so. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You sound so, your voice is matured, and I thought you were pretty great to begin with. And now you're singing about stuff that has so much meaning for you. Your mother, a song was written about your mother on the new record?
Yeah, well, there's a song on there about my mama. Yeah, she was very dear to me. I lost her about 3 years ago.
So
I knew
sorry.
I would be unprepared for that. But yeah, she was special, as many mothers are, you know.
So. You know what's funny? You say you're unprepared for it. You know throughout your life that's probably going to happen, and yet when it happens, that you're unprepared, aren't you?
Oh, it's a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Both my parents. I mean, I was very lucky growing up. I had both parents, and not a lot of people even have that, you know. So, and it was a very small Scottish family. You know,
mm-hmm.
We moved from Scotland to Australia when I was 14, so it was a very close family, and and we laughed a lot. And I even, through my life, I thought to myself, when I lose these people, I'm not going to be happy about that.
You know?
And so I think that when you lose people that you really dearly love, they kind of, they inhabit you, they enter you, and they kind of, and so you, in some ways, you travel around with them all the time.
Sure.
So there's something in that. And I'm lucky because I play on stage, and I kind of, my father was a great singer and a dancer when he was young. So when I'm on stage, I feel like he's there as well. So it's kind of, it's a selfish thing because it's a way of keeping them and bringing them back
sure.
to life, you know?
It's like that hole in your heart you feel when you lose your parents fills up with their presence or something.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a joyful thing, but it's at the same time, it's like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
It sucks. It sucks,
it really
plain
does.
And simple.
Colin,
the universe is not set up in a very, in a great way.
Oh.
No, I'm an orphan too, so.
Mm. With your father also having been a singer and a dancer, how did he and your mom, how did they process your success?
Oh, they were very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool about it, yeah. They were you know, up until my father passed away, whenever I'd go and have coffee with him, you know, mm-hmm. which was often, you know, when I would go down to Melbourne, he would still say to me, you all right for money? You want a wee bit of money?
Oh.
He'd slip me $20.
Well, a musician. Yeah. Sometimes like they need the money. You know,
but even when you've got songs that are on the charts and you're doing well and you're playing big venues all over the place, he was still concerned that maybe a 20 wouldn't be a terrible thing.
So you're concerned, yeah. And often he was right. Often I didn't have any cash.
I have a 17-year-old son, Michael, who walks around the house all the time playing guitar. It's like a wandering minstrel. Did you used to do that?
I still do that.
You still do that. Did your parents ever say, come on, I'm trying to watch TV?
No.
All right, I'll stop doing that.
No, they were worried that I was going to go into music. You know, they were concerned.
Yeah.
Because they figured the chances of actually making a living from it were very slim. But at the same time, they paid for singing lessons, you know.
So, yeah.
But
did they buy you guitars, too?
Well, we had in Scotland, we had a music shop, which was a great way to grow up. So between the age of 5 and 14, I was in a music shop in Scotland, between the years of 1958 and 1967. So incredible years to be involved, to be selling music in a shop.
You know? Yeah.
So when we left there, we went to Australia. I took an old Echo Italian guitar. It wasn't a very good guitar, but no, I think from memory, I always, you know, worked and saved up and bought my own guitars, you know, which I still do. I still save up and buy my own guitars.
Look at you. You've had quite a year. The Jimmys, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Waiting for My Real Life, a documentary about your career. You're going to be showing that tonight, correct, at City Winery?
That's correct. You have all the facts correct.
I do. City Winery, Chicago tonight. You're going to do a little Q&A, playing some music. Waiting for My Real Life documentary will be shown. I can't wait to see it.
Me too.
Cannot wait.
Have you not seen it yet?
You've seen it.
Yeah. Did you learn anything about yourself? When they make a documentary about you, you're forced to really expose everything. What did you learn about yourself you didn't know?
It's a bit long. could have been a bit more concise.
That's all right. There's nothing wrong with that.
A little too much waffle.
Nah, that's going to happen. Don't feel bad. Colin Hay is here. He is performing, as Wendy just said, at the City Winery. CityWinery.com/Chicago has ticket information. We'll come back, and then you'll do a song for us, I hope?
Sure.
Excellent.
Sure.
Stick around, Bill and Wendy, along with Colin Hay on WGN.
That is Kookaburra Sits in the Old Oak Tree, isn't it?
What's that?
In Land Down Under. I guess you couldn't hear it.
You mean, is that what it is?
Yes.
Well, there's two bars of Kookaburra Sits in the Old Gum Tree in Down Under, yeah.
All right, that's all I wanted to know.
Sampling.
That's all I wanted to know.
I went through 6 years of litigation about it.
Seriously?
Did you?
And we lost.
Oh, no. Yeah. Colin, there's a lyric in there.
Sorry, I brought that up.
That's okay. It's water under the bridge now, but you are correct.
Yes.
We didn't realize it at the time. But,
but
it turned out
to
be.
I did right away.
There's a lyric in the song that says, where beer does flow and men chunder.
Yes.
I don't know what chundering is. I may be chundering as we speak, and I'm not even aware of it. What is chundering?
Well, if you were, I think everyone would run out of the room.
Why? You know, what does it mean?
Is vomiting.
Oh, no.
Ew.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Did you really want to know that?
No. I want to unknow it.
It comes from when they used to throw refuse and other things out of windows.
Yeah.
They used to say, watch out under, which got reduced to chunder. Watch out under.
I had no idea. That's great. Okay, good. Now I know what it means.
It's an Australian. You were asking before about Australianisms.
Yes,
they say that in the land of the wombat. They say chundering.
They
chundering.
Do. All right.
It comes from. There's a guy down there called Barry Humphries. He actually was one of my
comedian
growing up, and it's a
very funny man.
Saying to chunder.
Yeah. All right. Good.
I'll keep that
thank
in
you.
Mind next time.
Anything
I'm
else you'd like to know?
No, I'm good. You filled me in. Thank you.
Yes. All right, Colin Hay is here. We are happy that he's here, and you'll be happier tonight. City Winery, Chicago. He'll be there for Q&A and a screening of Waiting for My Real Life, his documentary. And what do you want to play for us right now?
I'm going to play a song called Come Chundry, Come Tumbling Down.
point in the wishing well, but it's a long time dry. I watch that old Greyhound bus kick up dust as it rolls on by. I ask the man in the station, he says, son, just take a look around. There hasn't been a train through here since it all came tumbling down. Come tumbling down. Come tumbling down. Come tumbling. Come tumbling. Come tumbling down. I'm not a drinking man no more, but this one line I got lost. I've never been much of a dancer, but this night I surely was. I made it out to the cottonwoods, slept with my ear down to the ground. And in my dreams I could hear the screams as it all came tumbling down. There's a child sitting on the stairs. She's seeing everything there is to see. Somehow she still cares. We took a ride on the Ferris wheel, made of glass and steel and such. Now it's melting in the sun. It's not worth all that much. I raise my hands up to the sky as we climb to higher ground. Let's just keep on dancing till it all comes tumbling down. Come tumbling down. Come tumbling down. Come tumbling. Come tumbling. Come tumbling down.
Awesome.
That's pretty darn good. That's outstanding. Mean, you started to laugh toward the end. I noticed that. What was going on? What was making you laugh?
I just told myself a joke. I amused myself.
It's just,
I have that power.
That's beautiful.
It's pure joy when you play, isn't it? Because you just really are having a good time. Not that you weren't before, but isn't it different now? Now you can just, it's joy coming out of you.
Well, it's always been pretty joyful. I've always enjoyed the fact that, you know, I can play music. It is a great thing.
Yeah,
absolutely. I can't think of anything better to do.
If you had the
chance. Give him a 20, Bill.
I have a 20. If you need the mic on, my 20 is your 20.
Yeah, I'll take your 20.
All right, that's fair. All right, let's do that. Who does this? I mean, you've been doing this a long time and you're so great at it, but who does this? Who sings and tells stories through their music that you just say to yourself, I don't know how they do it. They're above and beyond anything I could ever achieve. Is there anyone in the music business like that?
Well, there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people that I still listen to. I mean, I still listen to people. I mean, if I think about, say, an album like Rubber Soul, that's what you still aspire to. Or if I think about the lyrics of Bob Dylan, I think there was he's still making music and he has an extraordinary output of quality and quantity and there are still many people. I still listen to Joni Mitchell. I listen to Randy Newman. I listen to a lot of, you know, new people as well. But yeah, there's tons of stuff out there that's really inspiring to listen to. Absolutely.
Good. I like hearing that. That's great. Boy, do you sound good, Colin.
Thank you.
I mean, really.
I appreciate that.
You really do. Go see Colin at the City Winery. Citywinery.com/Chicago has all your ticket information. And then you have something coming up in March that we can talk about as well.
Thalia Hall
in Chicago. That's March the 10th.
Thalia, dude.
Yeah.
Thalia.
I think Bill didn't know, so he was waiting for you to say it.
I would say Thalia, but some people may say Thalia.
Perhaps.
They'll let you in either way, right? No matter what you call it, they'll let you in.
They'll let you in.
No chundering.
They'll let me in as long as I've got my credentials.
And the new release, the new album, Fierce Mercy, drops on the 3rd. That's what the kids are saying today, March 3rd.
I know. They say drop.
I know. I hate that, too, but I had to. March 3rd, it drops, Bill.
Well, dropping.
Hopefully someone will catch it.
It all ties into Tumbling Down. Everything ties in. Colin, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
We're huge fans. And
huge fans.
Like we said, you sound so good.
Thank you so much.
A quick break and then some news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Well, once again, Colin Hay has opened for you, for Eric Zorn. That's a good show.
He likes opening for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I know he does.
He does. Sometimes he does my hits, you know, and then I've got to think of something else to do. But yeah.
We have talked quite a bit about Donald Trump and what went on over the weekend with the immigration ban. We want to discuss some politics with you, but on a more local level, and that's the Rod Blagojevich story and his daughter, Amy Blagojevich.
Which still has a bit of Trump to it, actually.
So, yeah, it sort of does, doesn't it?
Yeah, there may be a Trump angle to this story. Yeah, well, just the background. Well, the deep background, of course, is that Rod Blagojevich is in federal prison serving a 14-year sentence for political corruption. And he was hoping for clemency. I mean, his appeals have all fallen short. He was hoping that President Obama, in his last few days in office, would issue him a commutation, or not a pardon, but a commutation. Say, you know, you're free to go now, which he did with Chelsea Manning. And he did with, I'm blanking on the name of the guy from the FALN, and a bunch of other people, too. I mean, he has a lot of, he made a number of decisions like that, but he did not address the Blagojevich situation. Amy Blagojevich, who is Rod Blagojevich's older daughter, wrote a letter to Obama. Mm-hmm. And it's not totally clear to me whether I know that her mother posted it on Facebook. And it became, and then it made the rounds. A lot of people saw it. It was a news story at the end of last week. And I don't know whether it was her intent always to make it public. It was a very harsh letter. It was about 1,500 words. And, you know, it was essentially, you know, calling that he was selfish and spineless. Obama is selfish and spineless, saying, "You're either a horrible parent or a horrible person for not letting my father out. I can see the blood on your hands." She wrote.
See, I understand how she feels. She wants her father out. I personally think the sentence was too long, but it's just mean, you know? I looked at it, and how old is she?
She's 20 years old.
I just thought this is just, it became very snarky and rude. It's like, I don't know what to say. And well, I know she's upset.
There's a lot of pain in this letter.
I get it.
And I totally get that, too. And there are people who are on my Facebook feed and also elsewhere online who are going after her in a way that I think is really unfair. I know she's 20 years old. She's, you know, technically an adult and is responsible for her decisions and so on. I really see in this letter a great deal of pain from her. This is another part here that I wanted to read. I'm shocked at how bitter and full of hate I've become. I've dealt with depression, anxiety, insomnia, and aspects of PTSD. I've had days where I couldn't pry myself from bed, days where I can't stop crying or feeling the pain that has been inflicted continuously, and days where the fear of another 8 years and with her father in prison consumes me completely. And she's got a younger sister, Annie, who is presumably going through some of the same issues about not having her father there. And so it's like it's heartbreaking, and it's something that I had thought about all along in the Blagojevich case, which was every time he was pulling these sleazy maneuvers, and every time he was trying to sell the Senate seat or get, squeeze a donation out of a children's hospital and stuff, every time he was doing that, he was putting those girls in jeopardy. Now, his wife can, she can stand on her own.
She's tough.
She's
tough.
But he was putting those girls at risk when he was doing that. And that's true of everybody who commits a crime, right? And everybody who Obama denied, most people who are in prison have either kids or loved ones, parents, somebody who is suffering along with them. And this is, part of the price of crime is that you're, when you go in front of a judge and say, "Don't put me in prison, I've got little kids," You know, to me, that's almost an, the fact that you've got little kids is an aggravating factor to your crime. Like, you committed these crimes, even though you had these kids who were going to pay this, to pay the price, which is one of the things that, infuriated me even more about the kind of stuff that, that Blagojevich was trying to pull. So what we see, I think, in this letter is that he has continued to tell his, rather than tell them, like, your father made a mistake, he broke the law. He's in prison, and I love you. He is, and you read between the lines in this letter, that he is aggravating the sense of grievance that they have. He is making them feel like, I am here unjustly. And she writes in this letter, you know, you've put away an innocent man. Toward the end, yeah, she says, she refers to horrific lies told about the case. She writes to Obama, you've betrayed the concept of justice, like many other heartless individuals have done before you. You know as well as anyone, she says, that my father is guilty of nothing. He made mistakes. He's human after all. But
that's inaccurate.
Nothing was illegal. You failed to release an innocent man. That is inaccurate. And the fact that she believes that means that he's telling her that, that her mother is telling her that.
Well, she might believe that, too.
I don't think she's actually, she was young when this all happened. She was 15 when he went off to prison. She's 20 now. The sense that, maybe she, you're right, Wendy, she is 20 years old. Maybe she's done her own independent research and read the books on this case.
And it's her father. You don't want to believe your father has done something wrong.
But it is up to, in my mind, it's up to her, the father, not to make it worse for her. And I think that the fact that she believes that he is innocent, he's an innocent man who did nothing wrong and is in prison. I mean, that would drive me crazy too. I would be furious too. I would write to, horrible personal things. Another part in the letter I didn't put in my column the other day had to do with, she was saying, like, you stole the idea of Obamacare from my father's all kids program, which is it's kind of a strange, healthcare reform is something that's been going on for decades in this country, and Obama tried to craft something together, and she wants to blame him for stealing this idea from her father. I mean, she's a very angry person, and I think that some of that anger is inflamed by her father's failure to admit that he did something wrong. And one of the things about Blagojevich, he could be out of prison by now. He was arrested in 2008.
Yeah.
And he fought these charges. Not only did he fight the charges, but he went around insulting the prosecutors. He went to this national campaign. Remember, he was doing all his talk shows, and he did Donald Trump's show, which we'll get to in a minute on why that's important. But he was going around the country saying, he's innocent, and these people are picking on him, and everyone's corrupt, and the prosecutors are corrupt, and so he rather than just say, hey, you caught me, and he was caught on tape. If you remember, I heard him say this. This was on tape. They had this guy, and if he had tried to strike a plea bargain. I mean, he had to be tried twice, and that's why he didn't go to prison for basically 4 years after that. But he is still in prison because he was refused to say and refused to admit, what he did. So all these things put together, you think, who should she be mad at? Who should Amy Blagojevich be mad at? She should be mad at her father. And that's really hard. And you see that and you think, well, that's a terrible thing. And so again, people saying this to her online and picking at her and calling her spoiled. And I don't think so at all. I think she has had a terrible thing happen to her. So can we get to the Donald Trump thing in a minute?
Yeah, but yeah. I just want to comment on one thing. To me, I would have loved to have read Amy's letter as kind of an op-ed piece or something like that, because I really felt for her and understood it, but I just didn't think it should be a letter to the outgoing president. That's where I thought it changed.
It felt very personal. She was saying, like, I believe in you, and now I think, and she feels like she's been totally betrayed by him. It's not clear to me that Obama gave a lot of thought to this, that it might have been something that he thought, well, I'm too close to this in some way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, the Illinois political, it was his Senate seat that he was trying to sell and so on. So that there was too close, too much involvement. And so it may have been something that he didn't really think too much about. He had a lot of things on his plate. So.
Remember when there was talk of George Ryan getting out early because his wife was in failing health? Remember that? All right, so now you have a case where potentially Blagojevich would be released because his daughters are growing up without a father. At the risk of sounding very, very cold, because I know this will sound very, very cold, aren't the prisons jam-packed with people who either have a sick wife or a child at home that is without a father or some circumstance similar, you can't let everybody out or out early because they have somebody at home that would be doing better if they were home with them.
Yeah, exactly. And again, the price of crime is that you are going to leave people in the lurch who love you and whom you love.
Sure.
When you do that. And so, yeah, I mean, that appeal from George Ryan, I remember they were saying with George Ryan when they were sentencing him all those years ago, this is a death sentence, 6.5 years, Your Honor, that's a death sentence. He will die in prison. George Ryan's still alive. You know?
Yeah.
In fact, I heard from people that prison was actually good for his health because he ate better and so on. But you know, that's beside the point. I think he was also let out briefly when Lurlin was dying.
I think there was more.
God, if only there was some device.
No,
where we could
some
look
sort of electronic
up.
Way. There isn't.
Gosh,
don't
I
do
wish.
The crime if you can't do the time. Right. Sammy Davis Jr. was right.
But I think that this letter was actually addressed not to President Obama, but to Donald Trump. And I'll tell you, should I tell you why now? Or
not yet.
I have to take a break.
Hold on. A quick break, and then we'll find out what Eric just teased us with. But first, this.
We're chatting with Tribune columnist Eric Zorn. Zorn.
You'll sing the praises of Zorn.
I will, and I like it.
The greatest father that ever was born.
That's what it says in the song, anyway. That's a lot of pressure on you.
Who are we to argue with?
That's a lot of pressure on you. All right, so you just mentioned that this does tie into Trump. I think I know where you're going with this, but for anybody who doesn't, how does it tie into Trump?
Well, the letter, and we're talking about this letter that Amy Blagojevich wrote to Obama, President Obama, former President Obama, on her mother's Facebook.
A quick timeout. Do we know if she sent a similar letter of any kind to Barack Obama prior to his decision?
Yes. We don't know. We don't know for sure, but she says she did. And she said that she and her sister had written letters to, and she has testified. I think she testified at his sentencing last summer that, so yeah, we know that this reflects sentiments that she has. But anyway, you know, my view is like, okay, this has been done. President Obama, former President Obama is out of office. And so this letter comes kind of out of nowhere just to express this anger. And I'm thinking, if there's a purpose to it, that this is actually directed at Donald Trump. Donald Trump has the power now that Obama had to commute Blagojevich's sentence. And if you remember the connection between these two, that while Blagojevich was doing his World I'm Innocent tour, one of the things that he did was he appeared on Celebrity Apprentice in 2010. This was pre-trial. And he didn't make it very far. I guess he couldn't operate a computer or something. He was like really incompetent. But when he left,
that was directed toward me, wasn't it?
I looked at you. I know you're great with the Etch-a-Sketch, but everything else is. Trump referred to Blagojevich as a guy with great courage. He praised him for not folding like a tent after getting in trouble. And he later told the Sun-Times Bill Zwecker that he was a nice guy. He thought Blagojevich was a nice guy. So there's a sense that Trump, with his personal connection to Blagojevich, I mean, Obama did not care for Blagojevich, you know, but Trump seems to. Now the question is this anything that Donald Trump would right now want to spend any political capital on? Because it would be controversial. On the other hand, Trump is someone who seems to have a gift for diversion and distraction, and you know, something will go haywire here, and suddenly he'll be talking about, we got to have, you know, well, just for instance,
the Supreme Court. Well, that's what's playing out right now.
They're going to do the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court announcement is going to be tomorrow night in prime time.
It was supposed to be Thursday.
It's supposed to
be
Thursday.
But they moved it up a couple days.
Because I think this rollout of the immigration thing, which you've talked about at some length, went so poorly over the weekend. Last weekend when you had the Women's March, suddenly he's coming out and he's talking about the vote.
Yeah.
Talking about, you know, after the big Women's March, he's coming up with other issues. So this could be something that he's going to keep in his back pocket. And when the world is all upset about, you know, everyone losing health care, he'll give Rod Blagojevich a get out of jail free card, and we'll all go running over like someone compared the media to kids playing soccer. They all run after the ball, you know,
right.
they can't focus on a strategy. So that could be something that he's doing. But I actually think that Trump may because this letter was so aggressive about Obama, that this would allow Trump to, in some quarters, show himself in contrast to him, like President Obama, he was cold and cruel, and I'm kind.
Trump's
this,
a family man. He cares
I'm a family
about
man.
These
I
kids.
I care about these kids, and yeah. I, and this guy's and there's a lot of people out there who believe, as Wendy believes, that this sentence was way too long, 14 years for political corruption. You know, when nobody got killed or hurt or you know, anything like that, he was just, you know, and most of the things that happened, he was just trying to do. He didn't actually, wasn't able to pull off most of his schemes. So the kind of things that he was doing, you know, I can see where 14 years seems
like a long time.
It was a real betrayal for him to use his public power for private gain, to try mm-hmm. to use his public power for private gain. 14 years is an awfully long time. And if he had shown, I would feel much more strongly about this if he had shown more, you know, repentance or contrition about this. If he had gotten up and said at his sentencing hearings, you know, I did this, there are crimes, I admit their crimes, I'm sorry about that, I showed extremely poor judgment, I apologize to the court, my family, to the people of Illinois, blah, blah, blah. You know, the kind
You're
of stuff,
right.
the kind of stuff you say. Again, I think if he had played this differently when he got caught, he'd be out by now. This letter would be moot. Is the point?
Do you remember how he kept saying all throughout this? Wait till you hear the tapes. The tapes are going to set me free.
Right.
When you guys hear what the tapes say, I'm a free man. And then the more of the tapes we heard, the more incriminating it all was.
Well, he kept saying that there were tapes that showed him doing other things that were good things,
and
the bad things.
Well,
though.
To me, that's like saying, "Look at this surveillance tape. It shows me going into the bank 30 times and just making a withdrawal and leaving." And so you've got one tape where I hold up the teller.
Yeah.
You know, come
yeah.
on. I mean, it's like, yeah, he did. He wasn't always trying to squeeze people for money and so on. But you know, the things that he was caught on tape saying and doing were bad. And again,
I forgot about that, Bill.
I would feel a lot better. And the thing, you know, one thing that I dread, he will get out someday, and I know that he's going to be going around and talking about how innocent he is, and he's going to be chirping about that for so long. And I really wish that he had just, you know, a little humility, a little acceptance of what he did.
But in politics,
people
are forgetting. That's hard to swing, isn't it? Sometimes
he's not in politics anymore.
Not
Bill.
Anymore.
He's done.
Right.
And I think if he were to do that, if he were to be able to say to people that, you know, to apologize in a sense and mean it. There, people are very forgiving. Look at Wendy. She wants to let him out now.
Yep.
If she had won that presidential
election,
I would pick him up.
I hear from people all the time, and I get it. I don't think they're soft or stupid about that. It's like you're thinking 14 years. That's
that
people
is
learned
a long
his
time.
Lesson.
People
He'll never
get,
do this
people
again.
Like, you know, rape and rob and shoot people and get way less than 14 years.
Yeah.
But then doesn't that open up the doors for other politicians to say, well, here's what happens. When I do something like try to sell a seat, they'll give me a certain amount of time. But then once my daughters write a letter, then I'll only serve a couple of years. So it's almost worth it. You don't think you don't see it that
well,
way?
Well, that's the idea, of course, is that you have some sort of a deterrent effect with these. And I think that was one of the things that Judge Zagel did in this case was he gave a really long sentence to Blagojevich. But, you know, the thing was that...
But he did that as a deterrent to other potential...
Right, but what kind of... I mean, George Ryan, at the time that Blagojevich was doing this stuff, George Ryan was in prison. His predecessor was in prison.
Yeah.
And that wasn't enough of a deterrent. So I don't know that long prison sentences, nobody thinks they're going to get caught. So,
yeah.
So it's a weird thing.
All
Steve
right.
Bertrand doesn't think
he's never going to get caught.
I will not get
Steve
caught.
Steve will not get caught. That's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune or listen to him every Monday here on our show. We'll check in with Steve and find out what he's done and he's afraid of getting caught for next. Thanks, Lou Manfredini.
He's learning to fly.
Lou Manfredini is?
Yeah.
He can do anything.
He really can do anything.
Lou Manfredini can do anything.
Hey, I was going to ask you something. I did not watch the SAG Awards last night.
Oh, you missed it then. If you didn't see it, then you missed it.
What did I miss?
I'll tell you what you missed. First of all, if you're one of those people who gets upset when actors make political statements... Last night's presentation was not for you because nearly everybody who won an award, without mentioning the president's name, mentioned their opposition to the president's policies and stuff. And that was a running theme. Many, many people last night did that.
That might be one of the reasons I didn't watch it. I really didn't mind when Meryl Streep did it. She was winning her Lifetime Achievement Award or whatever.
Yeah.
I just, I don't know.
You weren't in the mood for that sort of thing?
I just wasn't in the mood. You're absolutely right. I'm not saying good or bad. I just didn't... I felt like a lot of people were going to use that platform to say stuff.
All right. Well, you missed that part because that went on throughout the night. Then you missed Dolly Parton making jokes about her chest for a few minutes. She was up to... I know, it seemed like it seemed odd at the beginning, and then by the third or fourth joke about her breasts, we all went, okay, we get it. You're very well endowed.
Yeah.
She did. What? She said, boy, security's tight. They wanted to see my ID backstage, or maybe it was my double Ds. I don't know. And then that got applause. And then she said, a lot of people think my two best friends in show business are Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, but these are my two best girlfriends in show business. And she grabbed herself, and that got polite applause. And then she just kept going, making fun of her chest for like 3 or 4 minutes.
See, that bothers me because she is super talented. She's got a wonderful voice.
I know.
And now it's just she's making a mockery of herself.
Well, she always did. I mean,
I know, but
that's one of her trademarks, and I understand that. But
why aren't they saggy?
I swear to you, that was one of the jokes. Well, SAG award, that's one joke. That's one award I'll never win. You know, it was like that. All right, so there was a lot of that.
That's God, I like her material. Yeah. I'm sorry I missed that.
I thought Larry the Cable Guy was writing for her. It was that. it had that kind of a feel. All right. But the highlight of the evening, the absolute highlight of the evening, and I will say this, because Steve and I were discussing the show a little bit earlier. The show was incredibly diverse. Both the nominees and the winners were of all different cultural backgrounds, and that was exciting to see. But the absolute highlight of the night was when the cast of Stranger Things won the award for Best Ensemble Acting, which was fine.
I loved Stranger Things.
It was fun to watch. I don't know that it was the best acted show on television. There was some overacting on the show. Because
yeah, that's
the style of the show was very... It lent itself to being a little bit camp, you know?
Totally.
All right, so they won. That's fine. But during the speech, Winona Ryder, who did not make the acceptance speech, but stood next to the man who did make the acceptance speech... kept making the weirdest, craziest faces you've ever seen in your life.
I watched the video, and at first it's kind of that like disbelief look, like, oh my God, looking at each other cast members going, did we really win this?
Right.
Holy moly, you know?
At first.
That's what it looked like, and I would have said it looked like that for maybe 20 seconds.
Right.
But then she was like...
She kept doing it.
Doing a puppet show with her face.
Right.
It was really bizarre.
An actor on the show whose name is David Harbour, and David Harbour played the sheriff
on
the show. Very talented actor. He made a speech that had to do with, what's going on politically. And it was a fine speech. It was a long speech, but Winona Ryder just kept reacting. Sometimes she seemed in favor of what he was saying. Sometimes she seemed confused by what he was saying. And there was never any correlation to what he was saying. And the attitude that Winona Ryder was exhibiting didn't make sense.
It was really weird.
Now, I do have to say that prior to the cast of Stranger Things taking to the stage, at two different points in the show, and maybe more than that, I noticed it twice, as they were kind of panning through the audience, when they'd get to Winona Ryder, and they weren't going out of their way to single her out, but, you know, it was kind of a sweep of the audience, and you saw her, she was already making weird faces that, and there was no speech going on next to her. She was just sitting there making weird faces. I worry about her. I don't want anything bad to happen to Winona Ryder. She's one of our greatest treasures, for heaven's sakes. But last night, I called 911 a couple of times during the show.
She just made her comeback, too. We hadn't seen her in a while.
That's true.
Stranger Things indeed.
Yes. How appropriate.
Can I ask you something about the SAG Awards? We're both members of the Screen Actors Guild. I was through AFTRA, which was American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. They merged after I paid both initiations, by the way.
Then they merged. They waited for you to pay both, and then they merged.
And if you're caught up in your bill, your fees to them, then you get screeners and you're able to vote if you watch the films, which I didn't finish watching all of them. So I felt that wasn't fair to vote.
Can I be honest? I didn't vote this year for that exact same reason. In previous years, I've seen all the films, so I felt, okay, I can vote.
I didn't think it was fair.
Right.
But I have questions about this. I didn't realize that Stranger Things won Outstanding Performance by an Ensemble in a Drama Series. It was up against The Crown, which I haven't seen, but I've heard great things about.
That's with John Lithgow.
Downton Abbey,
yeah.
Game of Thrones, and Westworld. I haven't seen any of those, yet I know that they acted better than the cast of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
I thought it was like best new series or
no.
something. That seems crazy to me.
There were a couple of performances in Westworld that were just incredible. Tandy Newton is in that. She's so good. Anthony Hopkins is. Everybody is really good. Ed Harris is always good at everything. So I thought, because again, I hadn't seen, I don't watch Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
Hear good things, but I haven't seen it. The Crown looks great. Haven't
it does
seen
look
it yet.
Good. Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. So
Peter Dinklage.
I thought, boy, anything will win except Stranger Things. And then
even though you wanted it to,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
I loved the show. I can't wait for season two, but that seems weird. And another thing I have to tell you, outstanding performance by an ensemble in a comedy series. You have your Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
You have your Blackish. You have Modern Family. You have Veep. And the winner was Orange is the New Black. I got to tell you, that's not a comedy.
That, you know, it's, you could easily qualify that as either a comedy or a drama.
It's not a comedy. That's some really, like, intense.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on in the show that you could never consider comedy on Orange is the New Black.
I find myself gasping more than I do laughing.
Right.
I mean, that is a weird category to put that in.
That, you know, that always happens. There's always a couple that you go, wait, does that qualify as this? And I think, I'm trying to remember which award show it was that they moved Orange is the New Black from either drama to comedy or comedy to drama for that very reason, because it's hard to pigeonhole that as one or the other.
That seems more drama than comedy to me.
Yeah, I would agree with
nothing
you on
funny
that.
About
there have been a
girls
couple,
in prison.
Not funny, although the show has its moments. I mean, there are some funny things that happen on the show, but it's not your traditional.
Ha ha ha. But no canned laughter in the can.
No. Despite the name, there is no canned laughter in the can. But good, you know what? Good for them.
It's
incredible cast.
Sarah Paulson won Outstanding Performance by a Female Actor in a Television Movie or Miniseries.
Is that over now?
For The People versus O.J. Simpson American Crime Story. She was fantastic as Marsha Clark.
Yeah, can we please just end the awards for those people?
What do you mean? Oh, for the whole O.J. Simpson thing?
Yeah.
That thing has lived a long life, hasn't it?
It's been like 6 years.
I know.
You know what's strange? When she was accepting her award, Sarah Paulson, they showed Courtney Vance, who's in the show also.
As Johnny Cochran?
Yeah.
Is that who
he's just standing throughout, which was because everybody
like
else
a standing
had,
ovation?
I guess so, but.
No, standing almost as witness to her statement. I mean, really, he was like everyone was sitting,
just hovering,
she's
watching, and standing up. And,
but then they showed him later standing. Too.
Yeah, he was still standing.
Huh? Maybe he was just supporting her. If you want something, I'd be standing
there. You'd stand and clap the whole
time,
and
I'd be quiet while you were talking. But I'd be like, "That's our Billy. Way to go, Billy boy."
The joke's on you because I'm not going to win anything anytime soon. So
not this year.
Not this year, certainly.
How many awards has Julia Louis-Dreyfus won for Veep? A lot.
Oh, I don't know about. This particular, I don't know if it's Screen Actors Guild Awards, but she's won the Emmy pretty regularly and Golden Globes pretty regularly. She's fantastic on the show. She really, when Seinfeld ended, everybody talked about the curse of Seinfeld and, oh no, none of these actors seem to be able to find anything. She found Veep and she just shines in that role. She's so great there.
Every night we watch a couple of Seinfelds as a nightcap. The whole family does. That's the way, you know, you kind of calm down the night. And it is still so funny. And she is just so remarkable on that show, but she has gotten like 100 times prettier. I always thought she was pretty, but she is absolutely beautiful. And I've only watched a couple of episodes of Veep, but she's really good at
it. Yeah, yeah.
And Lily Tomlin won the Lifetime Achievement Award. What do I need to know about
her
that?
Her speech was great. She made fun of the award itself. She kept holding it up and she'd turn it around because it's sad on one. The Lifetime Achievement Award for it is sad on one side and happy on the other. And she kept flipping it back and forth.
She apparently got in a fight with Jane Fonda right before the awards.
Well, they said Jane Fonda was sick, but I don't know exactly what happened.
No, I'm sure she was.
She was probably sick, right? A lot of people were sick.
They're on the show, Frankie and Johnny and the Claire de Lune or whatever it is.
Gracie and Frankie?
Gracie and Frankie. Something big show in my house. Yeah,
right.
It is. No, really, my wife and daughter love it.
But her speech was great, and they gave her all kind of, nobody rushed her off.
I'm
she
a big
just let
fan
her speak
hers.
Her mind. She was really good. And they showed a bunch of clips. She's one of those performers that you forget. Because you go, oh, yeah, she was on Laugh-In. And, oh, yeah, she was in Moment. Oh, yeah, she was on that. Yeah, yeah. But then when you see it all together, you go, wow, she's been in a lot of good stuff, you know? She has.
I'm a big fan of hers.
All right, let's do this. A break, some news, and then a lot more show. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Isn't he great, that Steve Bertrand?
You can't find a better newsman anywhere
than
Steve Bertrand.
Go on.
It's true.
All right.
He's on the Walk of Fame. He's on the WGN Walk of Fame. I saw his name. The Walk of Fame.
We'll finish the song.
That's
for
all
next.
I have. I'm still working on the rest.
That's your song?
Yeah.
Oh. An original composition?
Better than some of the songs I've heard him sing.
I stole it from Tony Basil.
Oh, Mickey.
Yeah.
You're so fine. The Mickey song. You blow my mind. I'm distracted for a minute. We saw somebody bend down and kiss somebody's...
Yeah.
You remember that?
I'm trying to remember whose they kissed, but...
Stone?
Yeah,
somebody passed by and saw
all of
the... No, it
was Roy Leonard, I think.
Was it Roy Leonard's?
I think so.
There was a tourist that was looking... Was this about a week ago?
Yeah.
A little over a week ago. They came by and they were looking at them one by one, and then when they saw one of them, they did. They knelt down and kissed it as though it were... like a religious icon or artifact.
Was it like 1:30 in the afternoon?
Yeah.
Oh, because I got a shiver last week.
No, it wasn't you.
It was not yours.
You're sure?
The area in which it was either Roy Leonard,
yeah,
Dean Richards, or Spike Odell. Those are the three people that the person bent down right there.
All three pretty kissable.
All three are very kissable.
And the same guy, remember, he was walking around with... a plexiglass thing on wheels with a bullet in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Seriously.
That's true. Okay, I say Dean.
You think it would be Dean Richards?
I think it was Roy Leonard. I really do.
I can't remember, but for some reason I'm leaning toward Roy Leonard.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not you though, Steve. Sorry, but yes.
That's okay.
So getting back to, I don't even remember where we were.
Oh, the restaurant thing.
Oh, yeah. I never got to it.
Oh.
I wanted to ask...
Resuming something we've yet to begin.
I know Bill and Terry go out to dinner almost every night. What do you eat in your own kitchen? I just got to know that. Like, do you ever make a frozen pizza?
I'm trying to remember the last time we had something
Your daughter's cooked something.
Yeah, every once in a while, Reese and Kylie will make something. But Terry doesn't like cooking.
Do you have one of those fake ovens that they have in appliance stores?
Yes.
Or you know,
yes.
And with the fake food? Do
it's
you
cardboard.
Have it?
Yeah.
You keep the paper towels in the oven?
Right. I mean, every once in a while she'll cook something, and we all appreciate the effort because I know it takes meal planning and stuff, and the cleanup is a mess. But we like eating out, and we like ordering in, and we do that a lot.
Well, then you should be the one to help do this. These are, please stop doing these things at restaurants.
Oh, all right.
So maybe you can help us. Steve, do you go out to eat a lot?
Well, no.
No?
We don't really either.
Maybe once or twice.
But Sharon enjoys cooking, right?
Sharon's
so
a great cook. Yeah.
Yeah, I know Steve does.
Steve's a great cook.
Yeah, all right.
Made a little shepherd's pie yesterday.
Shepherd's pie?
The pea puree.
Because Shepard Smith came over to his house for dinner, so he wanted to surprise
him. No, Shepard brought his own pie.
Oh, he did?
I'm not eating that.
Oh.
So you made a homemade shepherd's pie?
Yeah.
I have yet to try one of those Blue Apron or Home Chef, because honestly, by the time I get home, and I know every mom listening is going, shut up, Wendy, but by the time you get to the store and then come home and cook, it's too late. So I want stuff just waiting for me, and these Home Chef things, I think, is a Chicago local business,
mm-hmm.
And it's on your doorstep, and then
right.
You just have all the ingredients, and then I can cook.
That would be nice.
And it's like cool things.
Sure.
Like interesting.
Right.
But so anyway, stop doing these things at restaurants. I got to tell you, some of these things I have never done, and this is one of them. Don't touch the tray. You know that, right?
Yeah, so when the server brings your food, you're advised to keep your hands off of it. Yeah, why would anybody touch the tray?
Because some people sometimes like to help and they'll grab their drink, but when a waiter or waitress is walking by, a server, I guess I should
server.
Say.
Server, yeah.
Your server's walking by with a tray, they have everything kind of balanced to their own needs.
Mess up the balance.
Exactly.
Yeah, don't touch the tray.
So don't touch the tray.
Do not touch the tray.
That's exactly it. The only thing that bothers me, says a waiter, when people take things off or load up on my tray while I'm carrying it.
Now I help, like if I'm done and the server's picking up somebody else's play. I will pick mine up and hand it, but I would never
put it
on.
I
understand the balance issue. Sure,
that's all it is. Servers balance things a certain way when they're carrying trays, and removing something that they're not expecting could cause them to drop the entire thing.
Mm-hmm. It's always funny too when there is a mishap with a server and all their stuff falls to the floor, and then people applaud.
Where do you eat? Because I've not had that happen.
I've had that happen about a dozen times over the years.
They clap?
Yeah, everybody laughs and claps and stuff like it's a show. And you've taken what's already an awful situation for the server and just magnified it by doing that.
I kid you not. And I have never seen that
happen.
You've
never seen it? It's always,
yeah,
I mean,
Chuck E. Cheese, maybe.
Well, that's where we eat all the time. We love the Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah, I'm already embarrassed for the person
because
that's already a mess. But then when everybody's applauding, that just makes it worse.
I would go slap everyone who applauded.
You're not supposed to slap other patrons.
I really have not seen that. That's
terrible.
That's
awful.
All right, another thing that please everyone stop doing this at a restaurant. Quit stacking glasses.
When they're empty, when
yes.
It's over?
Like if you're trying to help them and you stack glasses, aside from a teetering tower of glasses being in danger of falling, stacking glasses within one another can easily lead to a few glasses being ruined.
Mm-hmm.
When they're stacked, it's easy for the glasses to become stuck within one another, and sometimes there really isn't an easy way to get them out. The only option is to try breaking the outer glass to release the one inside, and that's a bad solution.
All right.
So don't stack glasses.
All right. You've talked me out of it.
Page two. These are things, please, everyone, stop doing these at restaurants. Just give your name.
When?
Customers often, whether you're
like
ordering...
Like when they want what you want, they say, what would you like to eat, sir? I should just say my name.
No. Whether you're ordering at a fast food restaurant or placing a to-go order from your favorite sit-down restaurant, the cashier might need your name for any number of reasons. If they ask, just give it to them. They wouldn't ask if they didn't need it, and you're just making things more complicated by... Who doesn't give their name?
I've never heard of that. You always want to give your name. Cross that one off.
That's stupid.
Give your name and how many in your party. Standard
My name
information.
Is Bill.
Right.
Do you say Bill or Mr. Left?
Mr. Left. Come on.
These are things, please stop doing at restaurants. Leave napkins on table.
Nope.
Please don't put them in your cups. A lot of people out there tend to think that by stuffing any napkins lying around the table into cups will ultimately save their server time when it comes to cleaning up the table. In some ways, it's true. It saves them a few seconds when it comes to picking up those napkins. However, it ends up costing them time in the back when they have to dig those soggy napkins out of the cups putting them. I sometimes will put them on the plate. The empty plate.
They're telling you to not do that.
Well,
they're
they say cups specifically.
Oh, cups. All right.
But I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to leave it where it is.
I think most of us are most inclined to just take whatever's in front of us and pile it up.
I know.
And just give it to them.
Even if they're not asking for it.
Because
right. Don't you hate that when you've finished? Sometimes at restaurants, you're still eating.
Right.
Or maybe it's a big, huge plate of pasta and you've decided to take a little break. Maybe you'll have another bite or two.
Yeah.
But they take it from you before you're finished.
Right.
Don't do that. I will bite your hand.
Well, I've seen them do that with food and with drinks. Sometimes you'll have like a glass of wine in front of you that still has, I know it's not a full glass, but
they're bringing you a fresh one and they take your old one. I'm not done.
But then you look like a mooch. You're like, no.
But you paid for that.
I know. That's why it's always strange to me that they do that.
At
you
least
should
take
wait.
The old stuff that's in that glass and pour it into the new
that's
glass.
That's the right way to do it.
Because, that bugs me, too. And with wine, you only get, like, 8 sips out of the glass anyway.
Right. Don't take a sip or two away.
Yeah.
You know what I do like, though, is, and I don't know what this is called, but you'll find a waiter or waitress, a server in a better restaurant always has this. They have in their breast pocket, they'll pull out a little brush. And if you have crumbs by you, they just make a neat little pile, and then they do away with it.
I have seen 3 different items like that. One looks like an emery board, like you'd file your nail, but it's kind of a V shape.
Yeah.
So then they just kind of scrape it along the table and it picks up all the crumbs.
Right. That's nice to have.
And then I have one at my house.
What is yours like?
And I've seen it at restaurants. It's just a rectangular plastic case, and then inside is a little moving brush. So when you brush it along the table, it picks up all the breadcrumbs.
It's a miracle. That always impresses me. I wouldn't mind having one.
Although you don't use your table, do you?
No, but you should still always carry one.
Look, Terry, no more breadcrumbs again. Honey, we haven't eaten here in a month.
Our streak is alive. Our Cal Ripken streak is alive.
I've never seen the little brush, though.
Oh, it's a mirror. I don't know. And they do it so covertly, like a ninja. Like they just come in from the side and they. And I always like.
With vigor.
Right. There's a lot. Right. There's a lot of enthusiasm during that. Because I always do. Like if I have crumbs by me, when I see them coming, I push them over to my wife's side.
I knew you were going to say that.
Can you believe this woman? She's out in public and she's eating like this? I love to do that.
You do that,
don't
you?
That's fun to do. But they're just so efficient. It just. A small pile, and then it's just gone. Like Doug Henning, just poof, magic.
All right, well, if there are any servers out there, 312-981-7200, I want to talk about the brushes. And if any of this is true or not, this is from fashionbeans.com. Things just stop doing at a restaurant. It's Bill and Wendy in 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. I know I threw a lot of numbers there. But,
that's all right.
Fashionbeans.com. I know, crazy website. What are you going to do? We are talking about things that you shouldn't do at a restaurant. Basically, it's called Please Stop Doing This at Restaurants. Dear everyone, please stop doing this.
I think with a lot of the ones you've given so far, it's customers trying their best to help the server. But it often works against you. But I think it's all well intentioned.
I think so too. Although Simon, you've been in the restaurant business a while, and you haven't heard of many of these.
Yeah, a lot of them I haven't heard of. I mean, like the touching of the tray and stuff is correct. But like, what was the one about the napkin shoving it in the cup?
I mean,
I've rarely ever seen that.
They say leave napkins on the table. Don't put it in your cups or on your plate.
Yeah, just fold it up and leave it there. I mean, that's the easiest thing to do.
Sure.
The worst thing is the people that come out for dinner, that they save up to come out for dinner and they can pay their bill, but then they can't tip the waitstaff.
Yeah,
that's what the next one is. It says leave a real tip.
If you can't tip, then don't come out, because that's how we make our living. We make our living on tips. We make our paychecks are zero
right
at the end of the day.
Right.
So if you don't tip me your 15-20%, I don't pay my kids' school. I don't pay my rent. I don't.
And you get taxed on it, don't you?
Oh, yeah. We get taxed on top of that, too. So
right.
Your paycheck is usually zero, and sometimes you even owe at the end of the year, too. They're really cracking down on that, too.
That stinks.
Yeah, it's awful.
Well, that was the next one. Leave a real tip, believe it or not. People actually do this. Granted, they probably think they're helping the server in some way by giving them what they deem to be an uplifting and inspiring message. However, that isn't going to help their server pay their bills. So you're absolutely right.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, 20% is a standard in most of our books. And if you can't afford that, just, you know, we would rather not have those people come out, because it's just taking up the table for the person that can tip us.
That makes sense. Simon, I was telling Wendy that sometimes in a restaurant, if a server drops a tray or has it knocked out of their hands, everybody starts applauding. You've experienced that once or twice, I'm guessing, right?
It's happened to me numerous times myself, and also in numerous restaurants that I've worked in, and I myself clap as a server.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I'm not going to clap. I don't want to draw attention to it.
I feel bad for the server when that happens.
No, it's fun. It's, you know, you got to have a good time when you serve. So. Right.
Hey, Simon, can I ask you a question? 20% is really a standard and good tip. You can tip more if you're really happy with the service. If it's terrible service, what would you prefer? That they say something to you and say, you know what, this has really been a nightmare all night. I'm not happy. The food was cold. Or do you just prefer they just leave less than 20%?
Depending on the situation. If the food was cold, that's not the server's fault. So that's either the kitchen or the food runner, but that's not the server's fault. So the service itself, if the service is bad, I suggest going to get a manager, because that server shouldn't be on the floor serving. And that's a reflection of the restaurant itself, not the, you know, the restaurant itself putting out a bad product as in a bad server. So I would rather have somebody go to a manager than leave a bad tip, because that's, again, a reflection on the restaurant. So,
all right. And if you send something back, like if your steak's not cooked enough, tell me the cooks don't spit in it.
No, not at all. I come from the kitchen, too. I have 20 years experience as a chef. No, if the food comes back, I mean, it comes back. I mean, the kitchen does their best to knock out what they can. And when it's busy and they make a mistake, they make a mistake, and they're going to fix it and bring it back out. So, but again, you can't take that away from the server. It's not the
sure.
server.
Yeah,
that your
right.
food came out wrong. Now, the server should be acknowledging you that if you ordered a steak medium rare and they put down well done, then that's the server's fault. The server should, they're the ones that they should take accountability for that, not blame it on the kitchen. And I would do that myself. I would tell them that was my mistake.
Oh, that's big of you.
So,
do you want to say where you work, Simon, or would you rather not?
Well, right now I'm actually putting together my own little food truck.
Oh, excellent.
So it's called, if you don't mind, it's called Simply Simon's Cheesecakes. We hope to be up and running in June or July.
Oh, hurry up. We're hungry.
Yeah.
That sounds so good.
Simply Simon's.
I would love to bring you folks some samples one day.
We don't want to offend you. We would try them. Bring them up. We would love to. Yeah, please do.
I got over 50 different flavors.
Whoa. All right, please do.
Do you have a cheesecake flavored cheesecake?
I have over 50. A cheesecake flavored cheesecake?
Like just plain.
I got traditional. Yeah.
All right.
I would love to bring in about 20 samples for you guys.
All right, you're on.
Thank you, Simply Simon.
Thanks, Simon.
Kevin, you can get Simply Simon's info if you want.
That sounds
good. There was an ulterior motive.
No, that sounds delicious.
All right, this is piquing my curiosity. Kelly, we don't have a lot of time, but what did you want to jump in with?
Oh, I was just going to say, the worst thing, I just work in a pancake house. And I
just a pancake house?
I'll be right back with coffee. Can I get you something else? And, $1 million, the winning lottery ticket. I mean, I wouldn't be waiting on tables if I could give you that.
Sure.
Just shut up. Shut up and drink your coffee. Is that what you mean?
I'm sorry?
Just shut up and drink your coffee, kind of. Is that what you're saying? I know what you mean.
I mean, I'll get you whatever you need. But, things that we're not magicians.
You know? No, we get it.
I mean, yeah.
Well, thank you, Kelly.
That's all.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank
all right. Bye.
Like my pancakes sticky and my coffee hot.
Always say that in a restaurant. You get better service.
No, you don't. Kelly would go, will you just shut up and drink your coffee?
Right. All right. We must take a break, everybody. It's break time, then the news, then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, just a quick reminder to everybody. The Super Bowl is coming up on Sunday, but we as citizens are not allowed to say Super Bowl. Do not call it the Super Bowl. You must refer to it as the big game or you will be sued.
Why don't you copyright the big game?
That's a lot of paperwork. I don't know if I'm up to that.
Because then what are you going to say?
People just go, that big thing with the pigskin that's coming up. They wouldn't be able to say big game or Super Bowl. Super Bowl tickets, by the way, and again, I caution you, if you tell anybody the story that we're about to share with you, do not call them Super Bowl tickets or you will be sued. Big game tickets, the prices are going down. What normally happens is they sell out immediately, and then scalpers get a hold of them, and then the price keeps going up and up and up and up. But this year, for some reason, for Super Bowl 51, it's taking place in Houston, just the opposite is happening. People are not buying these tickets.
Who's playing?
Isn't that weird?
Patriots?
The New England Patriots and the Atlanta Falcons.
Who are you going for?
If I were still a wagering person, which I'm not, I would say that the New England Patriots would be the team.
But yeah. It's a heart question, not a brain question.
Right. Right.
I don't really like either of them.
No? Neither one?
Tom Brady had ball issues.
Yes, he did.
So in a weird way, this is kind of like cheater's proof, like they're back.
So, I guess. Would you
so
not
I'm going
want the
Falcons.
Team? You want the Atlanta Falcons just because of that, because of Deflategate?
Yep.
All right. Steve, are you in on this?
I'm going Falcons.
Falcons
with my,
for you?
That's who I want to win.
But
any particular reason?
Yeah, I'm tired of the Patriots and Bill Belichick and the cheating and the
see.
There's a lot of wells. There's a lot of that.
I will bet you a dollar, Bill. Are you going
to
go?
I'm not allowed to bet anymore.
It's a dollar.
I can't.
I'll bet you an Altoid.
I can bet mints.
Spearmint or wintergreen?
They're wintergreen.
Ooh, no, sorry.
No, you're out?
Yeah.
Fries are done.
Kevin, what about you?
I want to see the Patriots do it.
The Patriots
you
for
do?
You?
I because I didn't think, personally, Deflategate was that big of a deal, so I kind of like the Tom Brady up yours, Roger Goodell tour.
There is something to that, too. I'm kind of siding that way myself.
You mean deflating the balls intentionally to get an advantage? Cheating wasn't a big deal to you guys?
I really don't think it was. That
really? But okay. In a weird way, though, look, that's cheaters' proof that they're back.
It just means they didn't need to do it. It doesn't mean they didn't do it, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's right. They didn't need to
they
do
didn't
it,
need
so
to
they
do it.
Deserve to win, but I don't want them. I'm done.
Plus, now Tom Brady, he's wearing that gigantic coat.
That's another reason I'm not going against. I'm going against them.
It's like the talking. I thought he was David Byrne there doing the.
Right. He did. He looked like David
Byrne. I still go back to when my kids were little. It's like, who are they versing?
Yeah.
Because you'd always see the schedule, and it's like, you know, White Sox versus. So it's
Minnesota
like, who
Twins.
Are they versing?
I don't know if girls do this, but I know I did this, and I remember my brother and friends would do this. When you don't have much invested in the game when you're a kid, like your dad will be watching the game and you just come in and you sit there for a minute and you go, who do we want to win? Because
right.
Whatever your dad
says, it's a
family
decision.
You go, yeah, then I would also like that person or team to win.
I just care what the dips are.
No, the Bears are out of it. It says, if you're looking for a ticket for Super Bowl 51 in Houston this upcoming Sunday for the Super Bowl, but don't call it that, do not buy it now if you want to get the best price. The average price for tickets to the matchup between the Falcons and the Patriots is already down 9% from last year's game. That's significant. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but that is a lot, according to a ticket reseller, StubHub. They are expected to drop even more in the days leading up to the game. Now, again, that's usually the opposite. As the game gets closer, you see the ticket prices go up, but not this year for some weird reason.
How come?
I wouldn't be surprised if the average ticket price drops another $500 to $600 as the week continues, says Glenn Lehrman from StubHub. The average price for a ticket at StubHub. Now, this one's tricky because they say average price, but the price, the difference in seats, especially for the Super Bowl, don't call it that, is immense. The average price, it says here, for a ticket at StubHub on Friday was $4,945, with the cheapest ticket going for $2,499.
That's one ticket?
That's not just one ticket. That's the cheapest ticket, and then it goes up. Their highest price ticket so far sold for $15,432.
Who pays that?
You know, it's insane. I know this because I talked about it with you. As the Cubs got into the playoffs and in the World Series, I kept looking at prices that were obscene. But then you say to yourself, well, you've waited your whole life for this.
So how many games did you go to?
I didn't go to any. I didn't go to any.
You've waited your whole life
but,
to not go.
I know, but
it's too much money. Come on.
I kept thinking about those games that the Cubs lost, and if I had shelled out $15,000 for a ticket, I'd feel bad that the Cubs lost, and then I'd go, and I just lost $15,000 to sit at a game for 3 hours.
And you'd end up hating the Cubs for that.
I wouldn't hate them, but I would. There'd be some resentment.
Yes.
Like, come on, guys,
you idiots!
I just spent $15,000. You got to guarantee me a win for that.
Yeah, but it went down to $3,000, and you still wouldn't pay that. That's exorbitant for a ticket to a game.
It is, and I'm such a sports fanatic.
Yeah, but that's $3,000.
A lot of money. It's a
lot
of money.
And this is 15. I mean, that's disgusting.
The highest price so far at StubHub went for just over $15,000, and the lowest one went for $2,500. Prices at Vivid Seats, that's another ticket reseller, were similar. Their average price was $45.10, so almost the same. Their least expensive ticket so far, $2,795. Their highest price is not given for some reason.
Boy, if the Bears were in it.
Right. What would that
They would
that
give
do
us
to,
tickets right. to fill the stadium.
Right.
Because they had lost all their fans.
When tickets first hit the market, they were much more expensive.
Than that?
Yeah. Mostly because many thought that the Dallas Cowboys would be involved in the game. I did.
I'm surprised they're not.
I am too. Things changed quickly when they were eliminated by the Green Bay Packers in the NFC divisional round. dropping ticket prices by close to a third. So the Cowboys are considered by many, much like the Cubs are America's team when it comes to baseball, the Cowboys are kind of America's team with football. So they just assumed Cowboys are in it. There'll be more national interest in it.
But does Gaga have anything to do with
no.
it?
No. Lady Gaga, no. Gaga's not in, no.
Because that would be pretty great to see her. I'll just watch it on TV for free.
I have to say this.
And then you don't see the commercials if you're there live.
You do not see the commercials live. Football is one of the games that, even though it's a lot of fun to go to a stadium and watch a football game, hate me for saying this, but it's true. It's more fun to watch it on TV. It just is. I know you don't get the thrill of being there. You're not in the room when the team wins the game. I get it. But it's just better on television. It just is.
I like to go to a Bears game every once in a blue moon because it is kind of fun to be part of it. But
yeah.
I'm kind of with you on
not
that.
Not for that kind of money, though.
Mm-mm.
You know what? It started to hit me like when the girls were looking at colleges and I was seeing the price tag of going to college, because then that puts everything in a weird different perspective. Like you figure out, well, that money could go to X amount of time in college as opposed to 3 or 4 hours at a sporting event.
I'm at that point now. I'm just thinking which banks I'm going to go rob.
Right.
Because, oh, my God.
Now, you know, when banks near you are robbed, you will be suspect number one by virtue of saying that.
Listen, if a bank near me got robbed, I would turn myself in. You know me. I miss too much information. Right. I would turn myself in. Oh, was that bank robbed? Did they find out who did it? Why? Do you know something? All right, I did it.
You did it. That's all right. All right, let's do this. A quick break.
I'm an easy nut to crack.
I think you are. I think you are. If you want to jump in, you know how to reach us, 312-981-7200. Call us or text us there. More in a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, people are texting us at 312-981-7200. We're talking about, for some reason, your Super Bowl tickets, which normally escalate as the week goes on, are a little bit lower this year. The demand just doesn't seem to be there. And the price seems to be, if you're listening to places like StubHub, is that Hub Arkish's
yes,
ticket broker? Or Ticket City, or they mention a couple of others in the story, Vivid Seats. For some reason, this time around, the more you wait, the lower the price is on the Super Bowl tickets, which is almost unheard of.
Someone has suggested, you know, how Tom Brady's big David Byrne coat was mentioned?
Yes.
Somebody said maybe Tom Brady's wife is underneath that coat deflating the balls.
I wouldn't count that out. There's a chance of that. Here's a text. 847 says, we went to last year, the last Bears Super Bowl. That would be against the Colts, right? At the last minute, we waited outside the stadium until almost game time and then got tickets for just $1,500 each.
Just $1,500
well,
each.
I know that's still a whole big hunk of money right there.
Plus the flights to get there.
Yes. There's that too, but it's a fraction of what people were paying just moments earlier.
I guess.
If you were trying to get them online, you also run the risk. You know, there's so many ticket scammers out there.
I don't trust anyone unless I physically have a ticket in my hand.
I agree.
Cause
I'd be afraid.
All right, you know how sometimes if you get tickets online, there's a barcode. You can
right.
go to Hawks games by getting that.
Right.
What if somebody photocopies their ticket?
Yes.
But they're already there. You're going to go use it. It's null and void.
Right.
Trust no one.
That's
seriously.
The best way to be.
I really don't. Everybody's out to scam everybody else.
If Bill paid, and I'm Bill in this equation, if Bill paid $15,000, because I was talking about the potential for buying Cubs World Series
You were
Series
never
tickets,
going to do it. You were never going to. I know you. You would never plop down $15,000 because you wouldn't go by yourself.
That's
and that
true.
Meant 30,000.
That's
so
true.
I know for a fact there's no way you would have done
That's
it.
True. It is true.
I know you like that.
But you also know me enough
head.
To know how much I love.
I know, but that's not worth it to you. That's money. You love money more.
I don't love it more. I just know, like, I had such a great experience watching it in my living room on a widescreen TV with my wife and daughter. That was great. That's all I needed. It would have been nice to have been there.
Would have been better to have been there.
I would love to have been there.
But not for $30,000.
Not that much.
Because we talked about it. Somebody offered you a ticket, and
right.
you're like, I can't go by myself.
Could you?
Yes. If it was something I loved that much, absolutely.
Really? I couldn't do it. But they said that if I did spend that kind of money, Where'd the text go? If Bill paid $15,000, that would be 2 years out of his $20 daily allowance. That's right. I wouldn't be able to have lunch for 2 years.
Can I just say, whoever texted that in, Kevin and I witnessed him pull out his little crumply $20 bill out of his pocket today.
Right.
Wasn't even in your wallet, was it?
No. I just keep it
you
in my pocket.
You are a little boy.
Just ready.
But and I wouldn't go by myself either.
But who would go by themselves?
A lot of people. Kevin, would you go to, Blackhawks are up for the Stanley Cup playoff. There's only one ticket. Would you go?
Yeah, I go solo.
Just sit by yourself.
Well, you have camaraderie with the people around you. That's what I would love. I'd probably have the best time of my life
hanging with strangers.
And then they would go, when is she getting out of here? But they'd be nice to me for just that night.
They'd do this. We paid $15,000 and we're sitting next to this. Can you believe this? She won't leave us alone.
See, but going to a Cubs game to me is a big pain in the butt.
Parking,
it's just there's no easy way to get there, and parking is a nightmare.
And you see the home team win.
I'm not a
Cubs
fan.
If everything goes well.
You know, I like having the parking lot on the south side.
Right.
Then I really would go to a game by myself.
I don't see that. Really?
I don't know. It depends what it was.
My nephew, this is from 630, my nephew had tickets stolen for a Penn State game. And then quickly called the alumni office, and those tickets were deactivated. That's a smart move.
Genius.
That's exactly what you need to do in a situation like this.
Somebody went solo. Hi, Leslie. How are you?
Just fine, Wendy. How about you?
We're doing well. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I'm widowed. I'm a huge Cubs fan. Also, used to live in the neighborhood, you know, when you can get a ticket anytime.
Yeah.
And not this past season, but last year's, I lucked out and I got into the lottery to get NLCS tickets. And I called all my, you know, my brothers and sisters to see if anybody wanted to go. No, they were all too busy. So I went by myself, had a great time. Of course, they lost. But just, you know, if it meant that much to you,
yeah.
I am so happy I got those tickets.
Oh, how about that? Did you talk to the people sitting around you, I'm guessing, during the game, right?
Yeah, had a great time.
Oh, all right.
See, Bill wouldn't talk to the people next to him. That's the problem.
No, I even cracked up the one of the girls that was sitting next to me because I told her about a dream that I had the night before.
You did?
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, like I said, I'm widowed.
Yeah.
And I'm dreaming of me and my husband are out on a beach somewhere. And I'm looking a lot better than I actually do.
Oh, all right.
It is a dream, after all.
Yeah, live it up.
And so he rolls over to me and he goes, honey, is there anything you want? And I wanted to hit a homer, hopefully with somebody on base.
Yeah. Wow.
And then when I roll over and look into his eyes, he magically turned into Kyle Schwarber.
That's a great
dream. Wow. Wow.
You just tuned into the Hot Stove League.
I know.
I was mentioning this, you know, like in the first or second inning. And then Kyle Schwarber hit a home run, and she was freaking out.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That's incredible.
That's pretty cool.
Well, thank you, Leslie. We appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. Have a great rest of the week.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
And that's like Cubs atmosphere. You really would. It's like a group setting. It's kind of like any game you go to. It's kind of like you're sitting with a group of people.
Sure, I understand that.
They wouldn't even notice if you were alone. They would just think you were with the person on the other side.
I would feel the need to share the experience with somebody. And even though that, you know, it's a full house.
Yeah, you don't high five strangers.
I don't
high
five even loved ones.
I high five anyone who will have me. Anyone. We are so different.
Put that baby down. Wendy's going to high-five it. All right. We must take a break. That's how it works. We'll take a break. Steve will give you the news, and then there's more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks very much. Let's talk music for just a little bit. We were talking about last night's SAG After Awards. The next big award show will be your Grammy Awards. Not this Sunday, because that's the Super Bowl Sunday, although we can't say Super Bowl. But in
you
2 weeks.
You said it about 1,000 times today.
I don't think I did, because I would be sued if I did.
Sued per bowl.
But the Grammy Awards are coming on the 12th of February.
My birthday.
Yeah, they're doing them for your birthday this
Excellent.
Year. That'll be fun. So over at MSN, they put together, because the Grammys are considered to be, like, in the music business, those are the most prestigious, you know? There are some that are close. The Billboard Awards are close, and the MTV Awards are close.
Grammys the
but
best.
But the Grammys are the best.
Although, I feel like I don't know anybody anymore, so I don't watch them as much as I used to.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I'm not hip anymore.
No,
well,
don't
I never
say that.
Was.
Don't say that. But over at MSN, they said, even though the Grammys are as prestigious as they are, every once in a while, they'll honor an artist that just kind of fizzles afterwards. They've got some glowing omissions. The first one is, and we talked about these guys about a week or two ago, Baja Men.
Oh, yeah, because you were watching water aerobics in
Mexico.
Puerto Vallarta.
Yeah.
Over and over, watching the aerobics.
Well, more than watching it, you heard the music
right.
of the Baja
it terrified
Men.
Me. It terrified me every day.
Who let the dogs out?
Come on, this is catchy.
In 2000, wait, is that when this song came out? In 2000?
17 years ago,
in
Bill.
In 2000, the Baja Men crossed over into mainstream with their omnipresent earworm, Who Let the Dogs Out? The song that asks the musical question, Who Let the Dogs Out? Remember a lot of times we would want to know that and we'd say,
I was curious.
If there's some way I could ask this question with a melodic tone beneath it, it'd be great. Well, the Baja Men made that happen. they won the Grammy Award.
They did win.
Yeah.
For best new artist or something?
For best new artist who asks the question, who let the dogs out?
Ooh.
But again, wouldn't you qualify that as one of those songs that you hear and then I know it's stuck in your head. I get that. But by the third or fourth or fifth time you go, I don't even care who let the dogs out. Please, please stop singing about this.
I'm okay with
it. You're all right with it?
I mean, it sold a bunch of copies, right? That's why it won?
Sold, yeah. They don't go by, they're in the business of recognizing talent,
it's
not
very
rewarding.
Catchy. I'm sorry.
Rolling Stone magazine called Who Let the Dogs Out one of the most annoying songs ever. It uses as a footnote. It says as a footnote. That's the Baja Men.
No, they said we built this city.
That was the most.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought it was the worst song ever made.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
This was the most annoying song.
There's a distinction there.
I guess that's true.
What if the Baja Men...
I like that song, too. We built this dog.
No.
What if the Baja Men, Men at Work, and Men Without Hats formed a supergroup called Baja Men at Work Without Hats? Wouldn't that be a great idea?
Yes.
Call Colin Hay and see if he's still available, Kevin.
I'm not going to do that.
I have an idea for him.
He'd hang up on me.
Now, this is Hall of Fame when it comes to, boy, are these guys going to do great for years and years and years, and then they don't. Hootie and the Blowfish. This is likable. When you hear it, it's likable.
It's very likable.
Isn't it?
And Head Hootie is doing well on his own.
Darius Rucker has switched over from pop music. The Head Hootie.
You know, one of the Little Hooties brothers was a salesman here forever.
Who? Who Hootie?
Who let the Hooties out?
I don't know the band.
Who?
Yeah.
No.
Is that true? Which salesperson, Steve?
Well, you never knew him. Dave Sonnenfeld.
Oh, no, I don't know
his brother was in, was one of the Blowfish?
Yeah.
Really?
Back in the 80s when they were hot, yeah.
I didn't know that. In 1996, Hootie and the Blowfish were the toast of the music industry. That's true. They were. They had a popular video featuring Dan Marino and ended up with two Grammy Award wins.
God.
Best New Artist and Best Pop Performance by a Group or Duo with Vocals.
Must have been a slow year.
You know, I don't think it was. I remember watching that, and I mean, the music industry was just in awe of them.
Well, I don't know if that's really true.
Well, but I mean, not for a long time, but they were
but
one of those bands
good
that
time.
Just... Yeah, right. They came from nowhere, and all of a sudden, they were incredibly popular, and people went, oh, this is going to be forever. Nope. Although Darius Rucker has rebounded. He plays country music now, and he's highly respected.
Yeah, he does pretty well.
He does really well.
He did better without the Blowfish.
They were huge.
They were holding them down.
You couldn't have been bigger than
Hootie and the Blowfish
when they were big.
Yep, that's true. Here's another one, a name from the past you may remember, Paula Cole. Do you remember Paula Cole?
Where have all the cowboys gone?
Yeah.
Hit, hit.
So open up your morning light and say a little prayer for
us. Is this Paula Cole? We are to
stay alive. I guess, but this isn't the song we wanted.
The one I remember is, oh yeah, this is her. This is I Don't
oh,
Want to Wait.
Oh, this is it. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
This is also Paula
This was
Cole.
From what theme? Theme for what?
Dawson's Creek, I think, right?
Oh, I think
Isn't
you're
this the
right.
song they use in every, like, donate to our puppy foundation
commercial? Oh, yeah. No, that's
no,
Sarah
McLachlan.
McLachlan.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
She's
yeah.
the dog girl and the blowfish.
This is from Dawson's Creek, isn't it? I think it is.
I
if
don't
it
know,
isn't,
Grandpa.
They should have put it in Dawson's Creek.
She has a great voice, but, I mean... It's like Joni Mitchell called. She wants her.
It is very
it reminiscent
is very
of Joni Mitchell,
Joni Mitchell,
which she's amazing.
Right,
but,
right. But her, I think her biggest hit was the one you mentioned, "Where Have All the Cowboys Gone?" Who let the cowboys out? Remember, she did a duet with the Bahamas. Paula Cole secured 7 Grammy nominations.
Good God, y'all!
Winning just one for Best New Artist. Cole has released 5 subsequent albums.
Really?
But none have garnered the attention that she received in the late 1990s. She was just at, I think, the City Winery a couple months ago.
And she did that duet with her dad, Old King Cole.
Right. Right. It was the number one hit for
I mean,
a long
she saw
time.
Saw Natalie's Steve. Success
oh,
and thought,
right.
give it a shot.
Steve,
right.
You're like Bill when you crack yourselves up. You guys just sit back.
I didn't
and you're
say
like,
nothing. I just said it.
And wasn't Dennis Cole from the Mod Squad also featured on that, Steve? I seem to remember him being
He
on
was,
that.
But he did the third part harmony.
Right. Right. This is a
great song.
Maybe because I haven't heard it in a long time, but I like this.
We played this on Q101 like every 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yep. This is just the part she talks, right? This is seductive.
Are you okay?
I need to spend time with a cowboy, Wendy. I can't explain it. Caesar's Lemonade in the song.
Let's get to the thing. Oh, I'm sick of her talking.
All right. Well, that's why she's not popular anymore. People got sick of it.
She has a great voice, but I mean, total like one era wonder.
It,
you know?
Right. Right. But she's still working. I mean, like I said, she was just in town a few months ago.
And pitched to us.
Right. And I think we said yes, and she said no for some reason. I don't know why.
You might be remembering it differently.
I don't remember what happened. Now, I'm going to mention one to you that when this guy burst into the scene, everybody said, this is music. This guy gets it. This guy, Christopher Cross. Remember, you remember him, right?
Well,
please
absolutely.
Tell me you remember Christopher Cross.
This makes me want to cry.
Not sail?
Sailing.
Yeah. This makes me want to cry?
Yes.
He had this. He had Ride Like the Wind. He had Think of Laura.
What's that?
That's a sad song. I mean, these are all kind of sad songs.
Very
this song
sad.
Was popular, huh?
Yeah, this... Yes.
Yeah, when you got dumped by your boyfriend, you would listen to
Put
it.
Put this on to make yourself feel better.
Oh, my God. Who can do miracles?
The canvas can do miracles.
Oh.
Candace.
No, the canvas, right?
Candace. It's about a wizard or something.
I think it's the canvas, isn't it?
I guess. I don't
he's
know.
Because he's an artist, and he's saying the canvas...
I thought he was sailing.
Well, yeah, but back then you could sail and paint a picture at the same time. People
on the
could,
sail?
Yeah, that's how people did it back then, 1981. he also had the theme from our... Boy, this look at the hit, one after another after another. Sailing, Ride Like the Wind, the theme from Arthur.
Oh, that's right.
When you get caught between the moon and New York City. I know it's crazy, but it's true.
That, again, is not something I would put on the record player and jam out to.
But he, but
they were hits.
They
were nice.
All huge hits, and everybody said, oh, this guy, forever, right?
I didn't think
Cross.
Forever. I
you
thought,
think?
Wow, he's getting some good play right now.
That was the year 1981 when Cross took home, listen to this year for him. Aside from having all those hits, he took home the Song of the Year, the Record of the Year, the Album of the Year, Best New Artist, Best instrumental arrangement and accompanying vocals, all that, Christopher Cross.
Oh, my God.
All that.
Well, see, if you peak too early and burn bright, then you got nothing to look forward
to. That's true. Let's hope that's true for us. All right.
Have we started burning yet?
No, not yet. We've got more of these. These are the ones, the winners that the Grammys got wrong. Big artists that they thought, oh, boy, we've got something here. Not so much, though. Not in all these cases. We'll be back in just a little bit with more. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Just to show you the age barrier between some of us on the show, you, Wendy, and me, and Kevin, our producer, I said, can you play Arthur's theme? And he thought he meant Arthur the Aardvark, the kids' television show.
I don't remember this for being the intro of that cartoon.
No, this wasn't on Arthur
the
Aardvark.
Ziggy Marley did the one for the cartoon. Yeah. This is lame. It's lame.
You have to be in the mood for it, right?
In a lame mood.
But Ride Like the Wind was pretty good. Do you remember who sang, who accompanied him on Ride Like the Wind?
Ride like the wind, just to be free again.
And then who jumps in?
Oh, Michael McDonald.
Yeah, Michael McDonald.
That is the best Michael McDonald I have ever... Will you do a little minute by minute?
Maybe. I'll think about it.
That was fantastic.
Did you enjoy that?
Yes.
That's your Christmas present.
I saw
for
him.
Next year.
Michael McDonald at the Arcata. Amazing.
Oh, he is fantastic.
Sat there with his piano, looked like an angel on stage. He was amazing. Yeah. But boy, you got him.
All right. I want to skip ahead a little bit because I don't want to leave these guys out. The Wallflowers.
Loved them. How hot were the headlights?
Right. That's Jacob Dylan. The son of Bob Dylan, although he may not cop to it.
I love this band. And now Jacob's son, Levi, is a model.
Yeah.
And is quite the looker.
He's a handsome kid. In 1998, Jacob Dylan's band won 2 Grammy Awards and were nominated for a 3rd. Best Rock Performance by a Duo or Group and Best Rock Song for the ubiquitous One Headlight. That's the song you're hearing now. You get a ticket for that, by the way.
Yes, you can.
Years later, their follow-up album, Breach, was one of the first victims of Napster, as the file-sharing network was blamed
for Napster?
Napster.
Don't laugh
what
at
am
him,
I
Kevin.
Saying?
No, it's he's right, because you nabbed the music from somebody else.
Yeah, you nabbed the music.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it is Napster. You're right, Wendy.
Because some of the songs make you take a nap, like that last Christopher Cross song.
You're the one who was touting him.
I like both. I like Christopher Cross and the Wallflowers. Anytime I like a band, they stop existing. They just pull them out of circulation. The Wallflowers continued to tour and record music with several members. Bringing Down the Horse was their breakthrough album. I don't remember that being the name of the album. I'm thinking of some other album name for some reason. It was just reissued on vinyl, in 2016.
Not a proud, it's kind of a cool moment, but not a proud moment. When we worked at another radio station, I was kind of in the bowels of, I don't know where we were, where the concert was, but having a cigarette next to Jacob Dylan and Sheryl Crow.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I think Jacob Dylan bummed my lighter.
Did he really?
Mm-hmm. It was a proud moment for me.
That could be in your book, Stars and Smokes.
Stars and Smokes Forever.
Yeah. Do the book on tape because you'll make a lot of money with the book
right,
on tape.
I will. It was a cool moment for me. I'm sorry. Hey, you got a light? Yeah, you're Bob Dylan's son. It was pretty exciting.
I have to say, I know you'll remember this. We had them on when you and I worked at The Loop. We had Jacob Dylan and the band on, and they sounded as good in person. Like a lot of times, I hate to say this, but it's true, they'll stack it in such a way when they're recording it that it only sounds good when you're hearing it on CD or on the radio. And
they were great live. Like,
they were so good live.
And please share the story, because this is one of the funniest things you have ever done. There were press people that said, okay, you can talk to Jacob Dylan, but you cannot mention his dad, Bob Dylan. They don't get along. I think we had to sign something in our blood that said we would not mention Bob Dylan.
No mention. Right. So we had them on. We interviewed them. They were fine. Jacob stood right next to me. The band was in the other room. Remember, we would always say, like, whoever did lead vocals would be in the room with us.
Yeah,
but then
the band
was in the behind room. All right, so the interview part went well. The first song went well. We came back. Everything was going well. And then at the very end, even after promising everybody involved there'd be no mention of his father, Bob Dylan, I said, hey, I got to ask you something, and we're not supposed to ask you this, but I'm curious. And everybody got really, really quiet.
And uptight.
And I said, your dad is a very important person in the world of music. What's it like having Greg Allman as his dad?
Honest to God, Bill, one of the best things you ever said, because it totally broke the ice.
He loved it.
He totally loved it.
He was loving it. The band was going nuts.
But he never brought up Bob Dylan, did he?
He still, no.
But at least he laughed. That was pretty fantastic. You are funny.
Do we know what happened between them? Is that for public consumption? I don't know what happened.
I just don't think Bob was around when he was growing up, and he had some bitterness towards his dad
maybe.
And wanted to make it on his own.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
You know?
Yeah.
Although, then use a different last name.
Right.
Use Zimmerman, which is
right.
Bob Dylan's real,
the real name.
But I thought they have now come together.
Oh, I hope so.
That's my understanding, but I could be wrong.
Because I like both of them. I hope that's the case, because they're both immensely talented.
Yeah.
All right, we need to do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back in a little bit. Oh, if you want the rest of these, it's easy to find on MSN, because they mentioned a bunch of other artists that you say to yourself, yeah, I remember them, and they were so popular. And then not necessarily one-hit wonders, like in the case of Christopher Cross, but just bands that the Grammys loved that just kind of evaporated. Just go to MSN. It's Grammy winners whose careers fizzled. I know that sounds negative, but that's because it is. There's no way to sugarcoat that. We'll take a quick break. Ro and Ann will be in. We'll find out what they have coming up on their show next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.